Thank you for coming. This is going to be our August meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. We will begin, as we always do, with roll call and introductions. We have a couple of new commissioners who I would like to welcome as well. The person on my far left and the first person on my far right. So let's begin on my far left and go around.
I'm Andy Gregg.
Sean Denniston.
Alex Gall.
Robert Hines.
Sarah Fox.
Rock Manley.
Michelle Kapitanovich.
Welcome, Michelle and Andrew. We're very glad to have you on the commission. Okay. We will now turn our attention to the July 2018 minutes for approval. I'll give the members of the commission a moment to look that over if they have not had a chance to already, and we'll entertain a motion to approve those minutes when ready.
Item on the minutes, page 2, second paragraph from the bottom. I think that was Eric Lancio that made the statement of no stair railings in 1909. Not me. It's attributed to me.
Thank you, Rock. Anything else? There's no other questions or comments about the minutes from the July meeting. I'll go ahead and entertain a motion to approve.
Move to approve the minutes with the amendment.
Second?
I second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Minutes from July are approved. All right. We will now proceed with our agenda this evening. I understand there is a great deal of interest in the Vancouver Heritage Overlay Review for the Academy House. This is one of our most historic landmarks in the city of Vancouver, and this is a project that the Historic Preservation Commission has been following with the Historic Trust for a good couple of years now. So we'll be looking forward to the presentation from Keith Jones, senior planner.
Okay, is my mic on? Is it on now? There we go. Thank you. I'm Keith Jones. I'm a senior planner. I work for the City of Vancouver. I'm the case manager for this project. The project does require a land use application to be submitted to the city. And tonight is not actually a public hearing, so I just want to clarify that tonight it's a public meeting. However, we understand this is a very important building to the citizens, a historic building, and we want to hear what people have to say tonight. I'm going to go through what are essentially the three proposals that all are in regard to the Academy site and structure and surroundings, and I'll just walk through those, and those include the demolition of the El Presidente restaurant building that is across from the library and is right on Evergreen, a new mixed-use development on primarily the western side of the Academy site, and then also on the western elevation where you see the Academy sign and stairs that go into the building. We'll be talking about a railing renovation to restore it back to more of what it looked like historically. So with that, I'll turn to the slide. So the first slide, I just to orient everybody more to the site and the location and its surroundings, this image is looking north and east. Of course, you can see I-5, the Academy site. Excuse me, I don't usually do hearings here, so I'm just kind of getting used to this myself. Is there a laser pointer on this thing? Aha, I have it. Okay, thank you. So this is the Academy site, the main building, the El Presidente restaurant that I was just talking about. As everyone or most of folks know, that's surrounded by a lot of surface parking. A lot of this is gravel parking. This area is paved. The Vancouver Library is in this location. Evergreen crosses the freeway here. Officers Row, the Ford, are in this location. There's some low-lying buildings, residential, commercial, small garden apartment over here, an 80s hotel, and a restaurant in this location. And this image is of the zoning. So the red area is what's the CX zone. So that's a city center zoning designation, and that runs around along I-5, down most of downtown to the waterfront, up towards McLaughlin. And then there's some single family zoning up in here, R9, that's a ways from the Academy site that's framed here in blue. And then some commercial along the McLaughlin corridor. But primarily it's surrounded by city center zoning. And that's in support of the comprehensive plan as well as the city's city center vision plan that calls for this to be a center to the city and to have a mix of uses, for instance, putting buildings up against the right-of-way, mixing uses, allowing ground floor retail, upper offices or apartments, and providing a walkable center. And then the park here, of course, is Esther Short Park. This is looking, so the library would be here, Evergreen, looking north towards the Academy site. Just kind of going over the buildings again, there's the main Academy structure. And my understanding of that is I believe that, and the folks here on the commission probably have more of an idea than I do, but this was the main structure built in 1873. And then there were some additions in the 1890s. I believe it was in this area. Up to 1910, there were these outbuildings. This is the laundry building, the boiler, and then the iconic stack building here. And then what was the gymnasium in the 1930s, and that's now a preschool. And then, of course, the surface parking, that's, you know, at some point there was landscaping and even some other buildings around the site, but this is the existing condition along with the restaurant that we're discussing to be demoed. So the first item is the demolition of the restaurant. And the applicant will give a little more detail here, but I just want to cover the basics of the proposal. So this is an image, an historic image of the front of the Academy. It does, you know, it wasn't taken in 1873. It does show the other addition onto the building. But you can see that there's a clear view to the front of the building. And then in 1976, this structure here was constructed in an attempt to make it look similar. And the building is made out of hidden brick, which is a brick manufacturer at the time. And I think they tried to use some of that brick material here to recreate this building and try to match it. And it isn't a very good implementation of that in our view. So the code requirement for this part of the proposal is any demolition of a historic structure in this heritage overlay, which includes the Academy site, if those buildings are listed, they require an approval from the Historic Preservation Commission. The site is listed on the National Historic Register, and it's very clear to us that obviously, the Academy building is an important building and is clearly a listed building or a contributing building to the site. But the restaurant, we don't believe is. We believe it's not. Even though the site is listed on the National Historic Register, we don't believe that the restaurant is contributing. It's not 50 years old. We don't think it's contributing even to the site. So removing of it and opening up the front of the Academy would be of benefit to the building. So our staff conclusion on this item is that historic review would not be required to remove this building, but we are asking the commission to vote on that and just confirm that that is their finding as well. So, okay. The next discussion item is the mixed-use development. So I'll again, the applicant's going to do a presentation and go into more detail, but I'm just going to give an overview of the proposal. So, again, we have the main Academy structure. Building A is in this, would be placed in this location, and that'll be 5 stories, 50 units, and it would have 6,803 square foot of ground floor commercial that could be retail or office space that would be on the ground floor in here. This building also has a rooftop garden area that covers maybe half of the roof area. Then the other building is Building B. This would be a 6-story building, 90 residential units on the upper floors, about 5,402 square feet of commercial on the ground floor. Then over in here where we were talking about the gravel parking area, so this would be reconstructed into paved surface parking and landscape islands would be added that would meet current city code for trees and shrubs and other plantings to amass the parking areas. And then down here would be a public plaza at the corner of Evergreen and C Street, and that's around 5,000 square feet. This part here would be the same material and elevation, and the idea being that this could potentially be closed off and at some point, and then maybe there could be, you know, some public functions that could occur in here. And then that proposal stops here. So here's where the restaurant would be demoed. So this is just an image of what potentially this plaza area could look like once the historic trust would upgrade this area to blend in potentially with this plaza. So that's really just the basics behind the proposal. So the applicant will get into more detail. So the development standards in the code, and again, I guess I didn't describe that in the beginning, but it's in the what's called a heritage overlay, and that was established for the Academy building and covers the entire Academy site. And there's specific regulations in that code section in the city's zoning code that pertain to this site. So I just want to go over those in overview here. The main part of that, of those standards, and this is a schematic that's in the code, and it's a little hard to read. So what I did is I took the applicant's site plan and I hand drew that location on the map. And so this red area is what's called the zero height area. That's where no building is allowed. And then also within the code, it has a sight line that comes here from Evergreen. And I'm thinking that it's hard to know exactly why they did it that way, but because the restaurant building is here, I believe that's why they established it, thinking that this was going to stay, and then they would preserve at least some sight line because this sight line was no longer available because of the building that got placed here. So there's a 15-foot minimum setback beyond that along Evergreen. So the applicant has proposed to put the building back 58 feet between the sidewalk here and the back of this building. So that meets that 15-foot setback. The next standard in the code talks about the brick color being, or excuse me, the new buildings need to be made primarily of brick that are similar in color to the Academy. And the applicant is proposing to comprise the buildings of 75% brick. The next standard has to do with C Street. And so the C Street view corridor has a minimum width of 50 feet. And so the applicant is proposing to put their driveway coming in this way, and that would be 54 feet between the buildings that would allow a view corridor into the building at this location. And then just talking about, this is from the zoning code, but the maximum building height on the rest of the site going up and around and over this way, this is all 75 to 200 feet. And the variable has to do with FAA requirements, but the applicant is proposing a height on these two buildings of 76 feet tall. And then the kind of the last main standard then is in keeping with these view corridors up here on 12th. There's a, what it says is not a specific view corridor, but it says it wants two view corridors that total 50 feet. And so they're not, since the building's only going to be built or proposed to be here, there'd be 250 feet along this edge that would be a view corridor into this part of the structure. So those are really the standards that are contained in the historic overlay. Okay, so the code in this case says that the Historic Preservation Commission is advisory to city staff regarding new construction. And the approval process in this case is a staff decision. That means the planning department, the department that I work in, and we would make what we term in the code to be a type one ministerial decision. And the definition of that is we as staff are supposed to make the decision based off of standards in the code that we know are very clear and objective. So if there's a setback, it meets the setback. If there's a height, it meets the height. If there's something in the code that's clear, then we have to apply that. And because, and I don't want to get into exactly or why the code is written this way, it just is, and that's the decision that we have to make. That being said, the commission, we're here to hear what people have to say, and we're here to hear what the commission has to say, and, you know, this is an important project, so that's why we're really here tonight. From a staff position, the project, you know, must comply with the approval standards, and those are the ones that I went through. And so our conclusion is that the proposal does comply with the standards. And the decision will, by staff, will be made following the meeting once we get a recommendation from the commission. So, okay. The third item that's related is the west porch renovation. So we're just showing two images. Of course, this is the historic image, and this is the current situation. And you can see here there at some point there was an upper porch and a lower porch, and the stairs came out. And you can see up in here there was a doorway that we believe came out onto this porch. You can even see maybe where that was located at some point. And over time, they put this hideous kind of thing, sorry, on here and cover. And the stairs are deteriorating, and there's some columns in here. And so the applicant is proposing, they can talk a lot more in detail, to restore that more to the historic character of that elevation. So this is, again, the historic image, and then this is an elevation of what they're proposing. So you can see they're putting back similar features back onto this. The difference is before there was a staircase in this location, and now the staircase would come off to the side. And that's because of the development that's occurring in the parking that's going to occur in that area that the stairway would interfere with. The primary entrance to the academy is in the southern elevation, so this isn't necessarily a primary elevation or entry to the building. So, okay. So on this item as well, the Historic Preservation Commission is advisory to staff because the building is on the National Register. And we, of course, we find that the building is significant and on the National Register. The approval standards are a little different for adding on or what they call exterior modifications to historic structures. So those standards are applied for rehabilitation, and this is a federal code, and it's the Secretary of Interior Standards for rehabilitation, and there's a series of approval criteria you go through in ensuring that it is consistent with the building and that it meets the historic intent of the building. And in the staff report I provided, I did go through that and make some findings. So I'm not going to go through all those in detail, but our proposal on that is it does comply with the standards in that regard. So in conclusion, we have three general proposals, and they're all related to the academy, the demo of the restaurant, historic preservation review is not required because it's not listed as staff's determination, the new development, historic preservation review is advisory to staff on this issue, the west porch renovation, historic preservation review is advisory to city staff. And so our conclusion, as I had stated, is that it complies with the heritage overlay standards, and we're asking for historic preservation's input tonight, and we are requesting that the Historic Preservation Commission make a recommendation on each of these items, and then we would like to get a written determination within a couple weeks of the meeting is our request. And then before I conclude, there's a lot of information that was provided tonight, and as folks in the commission have seen, I got a stack of information here. I just want to emphasize that all of this has been placed on the website under the Historic Preservation Commission website. And I can kind of just go through just a few things. A lot of it is public testimony that's been provided. And when the staff report was written and posted to the website, I just wanted to point out there were about 20 additional, well, there was 19 comments or emails or letters, and then there was a petition, which is this memo here, and then I've identified those. And those came in throughout the week after the staff report was written, so I just wanted to make sure that folks were aware of that. The other information is what was posted on the site, so the staff report, the applicant's response to criterion code, and there were some letters. There was a letter from the Historic Preservation Office, State Historic Preservation Office, a couple of letters of support that were attached, and then the site plan. And then this large packet is the presentation that the applicant will go through here in a moment and walk you through that. So with that, that's staff's presentation.
Thank you, Keith. This isn't a formal public hearing, but we're going to treat it a lot like one simply because of the level of interest in this. So I'll ask the commissioners to ask any questions that they may have of staff, then we'll turn it over to the applicant for their presentation. And then following the applicant's presentation, we will be taking commentary from the public. So I know we have a number of sign-ins. Depending on the number that we have, we may need to limit those comments, but we'll take a look at that in a moment here. So are there any questions for Keith before we move on?
So under one of the criteria of approval for the project, under E, I noticed that it reads that it's a setback of 15 feet for open space and substantial planting. So it's not just a 15-foot setback. So could you explain how you think the application meets that?
Let me read it for a second, Sarah.
Oh, okay.
Let me walk back and.
I mean, this could be something for the applicant as well.
Okay, maybe that. Well, I know that they're providing. Oops, keep hitting the wrong button. I'll let them kind of go in more detail, but they are providing these plantings. I do realize that there's a driveway access point here. But then, of course, you know, all this is going to be landscaped, and then, you know, this is a public plaza that they're providing as a public benefit that will, add to the. But I'll let them kind of expand on what their program is or where they want to head with that.
I suppose I have another question for you, Keith, and it's on the same section, section E, and it's to do with this sentence just before the sentence that Sarah mentioned. And I'll just start partway into it. Such construction shall be so located and designed as to preserve views of the main Academy building from East Evergreen Boulevard between the freeway and C Street. I've struggled with that one a little bit since the last meeting when the developers had an opportunity to present it, and struggled to understand what the intent of the ordinance is, and struggled a little bit with the lack of specificity because we can't apply a number to that, but we can apply an interpretation of what that view is. And when I look at the plan, it looks like there's a section of that described view that's obstructed. So I'd be looking for a clarification on that.
Yeah, so if you turn to the schematic in the code, and I understand where you're struggling with that, but really it's saying that the zero build height is in this location, and then there's a sight line that's placed along there in the code. And then...
Keith, we don't get to see your highlighters when you're... our screen doesn't show us where you're pointing.
Oh.
Just thought I'd let you know.
Okay.
I guess I can imagine.
I'm going around and around.
You're
like,
trying hard
like
to
what
point
are you doing?
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So over in the zero, you can see the zero height area. Mm-hmm. There's this.
I can point if you want me to from here.
Okay. Would you do that? I don't have a mouse. over in that area is the zero height area. And then there's the sight line. Which is over in this location. And then the rest of that, on the other side of the red line, it allows a building height of 75 to 100 feet to the left of it in the front of the academy. So all of this area over in here is allowed to you know.
That's what I started with, is from C Street. Although, why would they mention C Street?
Yeah.
Is that the struggle, is the C Street mentioned?
Well, no, I think the struggle is that Section E doesn't talk about the zero height area at all. That's not where the zero height area mm-hmm. is established. Section E is about the removal of trees, but then the second part is completely unrelated to the removal of trees. It's about preserving views to the academy from Evergreen, from the interstate to C Street.
Yeah, so we'll need more clarification then.
So, I mean, it's pretty explicit that the views that exist need to be preserved along that whole path.
Right. In my reading of it, mm-hmm. that Section E it kind of goes hand in hand with A1 and the more general description of protecting the outbuildings and the grounds of the academy. Stating their importance and their influence on views of the main building and the character of the immediate environs. So that's been a sticking point.
Okay. Okay.
Those two combined.
Okay.
I think, you know, one of the things that we haven't seen here, and I think this might be one of the things that Rock is kind of picking up on, is none of the presentation materials show what the academy will look like from C and Evergreen. And so that perspective view, which is actually a pretty critical view of the academy because it's the view that lets you get a sense of the whole building and not just its front facade and how that looks. I mean, I went to the site and tried to reconstruct it in my mind since it hasn't been seen. And it looks like that perspective view is completely gone.
So you're talking about standing at the actual corner.
Not even right saying? At the corner, but from the corner up probably about half to two-thirds of the way up that building. You don't get a perspective view that includes the west side of the academy until you clear building, is that A that's on the south? Mm-hmm. And by that point, your perspective down the west facade is so oblique that you don't really get much of a sense of it.
Okay.
Are there any more questions for Keith before we move on?
I guess I have one more question. So, you know, the code says that compliance is based on meeting the purposes, intents, and requirements. And the staff report goes through all the requirements but doesn't go through the purposes. And since the code identifies that as a basis for compliance, I'm wondering why that's not in the staff report.
Yeah, so in consultation with the city attorney, in reading the purpose statement, I think you're talking about how it talks about the intent and the purpose. So in reading the purpose statement, in the city attorney's view, that this purpose statement is to implement the standards. So the purpose statement isn't an approval criteria that I can use to it. I have to go to the standards and apply those in this application. So it's just how it's termed. The following additional regulations are imposed in areas designated in order to do the following. So we set up different areas, including this area and the other area in Main Street, and this is, those code sections are intended to implement this. But to your point, if there's something vague in the code, then the purpose statement could be used to help define that. But I mean, going back to E, you know, there's a 15-foot open space that you're supposed to provide, and there's also a 75 to 200-foot building area in that location. So why would it, you know, if that were the case, there wouldn't be a buildable area in that location. So I think it's kind of looking at, and also the sight line in the schematic is looking over on the other, whether that's the best elevation, but it probably was at the time because the restaurant was in the way. So they're looking from that sight line to the building. And the applicant has pushed the building back to 58 feet to try to help that. Maybe the commission doesn't feel that's enough, but, you know, it is more than, it's quite a bit more than the 15 feet, so.
So in the city's view, that section is really just to inform whether or not the proposal complies with the specific requirement.
It's just, yeah, it's to set up the purpose statement of why they're doing that, and then to enforce those, or to, I guess, emphasize that these standards are to enforce these purposes. But it doesn't say that these are criteria. It's just a purpose statement. But that being said, I mean, you're the Historic Preservation Commission, and so, you know, we want to hear what you as a group have to say, and that's why we're here. I mean, these are discretionary items that, as the staff, that's the other struggle. It's a type one application, and so, again, it's a ministerial application. So we are going to have to look at what the standards are when we apply our decision, and that, I mean, that's just kind of how... It's a tough balancing act here, but I mean, that's, you know, we want to, on the other hand, we also want to do what's best for the building. So it's a struggle. So.
And Sean, I think it's worth noting that there's already been a major design revision to set back the building and increase that sight line. So I think maybe we can get into that in a little more detail if you'd like to in the presentation by the applicant. Okay. Is there anything else before we close out with Keith here? Okay. If not, we'll go ahead and hear from the applicant. If there's Mike.
Thank you, Chair and members of the Commission. We appreciate you having us here tonight, and thank you, city staff, for a great report and overview of the project. My name is Mike True, former president and CEO of the Historic Trust, and today I serve as a volunteer advisor with the Trust and member of the Academy Properties Committee as part of the organization's governance. I think before we start, maybe we'll do some additional introductions, and then maybe Aaron can address some of the questions here. To my right, Holly, do you want to introduce yourself?
Certainly. My name is Holly Chamberlain, and I have been hired by the Trust on as Interim Director of Historic Preservation on a part-time basis for about 6 months, and I'm a few days into that work now.
And I'm Aaron Weigott from Marathon Development. We're the applicant of the new mixed-use development of the site.
Great, and thank you very much for this evening, and we appreciate the opportunity to have met with you earlier in the summer, late spring, to discuss this project as part of our open kind of public comment period as we work through a number of different revisions to really help engage the community in the overall vision and preservation of the Academy. So we appreciate it. Maybe before I get into some background and information relative to really what the Trust goal and initiative here is, the preservation of the Academy, Aaron, do you want to address or assist with just some of the comments relative to some of the commissioners' feedback?
Yeah, I think before losing sight of those questions, I think I'll address those before we go into the actual presentation. So, and I don't want to speak for the planning department, but to take those in reverse order, the policy statements we always read as most codes have a policy statement introducing the code, basically the 20,000-foot reason for that code, and then the specific regulations or objective criteria is the actual implementation of those policies. So that's always been our position, is that we have to abide by the specific specific details and objective criteria of the code, but those objective criteria are really set to enforce the policy. The policy isn't the actual criteria that's analyzed. So that's on the policy statement. Okay, so Section E of the heritage overlay that you folks just spoke about, we spent a lot of time reading that section. It is ambiguous at best, in our opinion. So we spent a lot of time analyzing it and thinking about it. So let me just read it real quick. And it's interesting how they just throw it in with mature trees and everything. So they have all these other specific and very detailed view corridors, and then they just throw this in at the end of the code, you know, in mid-sentence when they're discussing mature trees. So, and designed to preserve views of the main academy building from East Evergreen Boulevard between the freeway and C Street. So the big question in our minds when we first started this 16 months ago or so was, what specifically is the main academy building? And that's really what we thought about and dug into. So does that mean you need to see every inch of the main academy building? You need to see the cupola? You need to see the front door? What exactly does that mean? So that was really how we looked at it. And if you read it literally, that you need to see every inch of the academy, so the entire western facade of the academy from the corner of C Street and Evergreen, you essentially wouldn't be able to build anything where the southern building is. So basically all the way between Evergreen and 11th would essentially result in a no-build zone, unless you wanted to build some funky kind of triangle where you'd have the view cut. And I'll actually pull up, we do have a perspective of that view. And again, it might not be the exact perspective you want, because it's also ambiguous of which side of Evergreen are you on. So when you hit Evergreen and C Street, are you on the north side or the south side? The perspective changes significantly depending on where you are between the freeway and C Street on Evergreen, so whether you're north or south. But let me try and flip to a rendering that shows that perspective. Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. Okay, so this is the perspective basically from the southern side of the intersection, so the southern side of Evergreen, from relatively close to the center of the intersection. And you can see that part of the academy is cut off. Part of that western facade is cut off. One of the significant design revisions that we've made that we'll talk about was pushing this southern facade 16 feet further north, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it made a significant difference for this view corridor and this perspective. Now, you could go to the other side of C Street, and the view, of course, is more obstructed. We read this to mean that you stop essentially at C Street, and you can look at it from the north or southern portion of Evergreen, it'd be different. This is actually a little further west than I think the code specifies, as if you can consider this code specific. So our perspective was that if you could see the entrance, the cupola, or the significant amount of the academy, then you have a view to the main academy building. We've also thought about the idea in that from the pedestrian perspective, the ground floor of this southern portion of the building is essentially all glass. So the reality is you're going to be able to see the academy through this southern building. So we came to the conclusion that, sight line to the main academy building from the intersection of C Street and Evergreen was, one, either significant enough that you could see the entrance of the majority of the building, two, the cupola, three, you could see it through the new buildings. And then the last point, and I think this is the critical point, if the intent of that provision was to preserve this view entirely, the entire academy building, they would have had a no-build zone for this entire western portion of the site, because that's ultimately the result. So, and I'll try and pull up something that would give you an idea. So here, if you were to have, and you can't see the pointer, but so the entire western facade, if you looked at the northern corner, so the northwest corner of the academy building, if you needed a view from the north side of Evergreen at C Street all the way to that point of the building, you'd essentially have a no-build easement or code that covers that entire western portion between Evergreen and 11th. And that's not what the code provided. They could have very easily implemented exactly that, but they didn't. They put this vague provision in there, I think hoping that we would all be reasonable in what the view of the academy was. Maybe they didn't think through it entirely. But ultimately, if they wanted to preserve that entire view of the western facade all the way toward the north section of the academy, they would have had a no-build easement for essentially that whole western portion. Because it would result, you can imagine, on a triangle building that is inefficient and impossible to build. So interpreting the code in that fashion would result in totally eliminating that southern building. So it's always been our position that from that perspective, if you can see the main academy building and appreciate what it is, then you're complying with that portion of the code. So that's the answer to that question. The substantial planting question is a good one. Let me try and get, I don't think I have this, just the site plan that shows exactly where the planting are. But this overhead perspective will give you some idea. So the property line, which we're responsible for versus the trust being responsible for, runs north-south on the eastern portion of that parking there. So what we're talking about is everything west of there. And what we've done is the 15-foot setback we've filled with planting on each side of that drive lane. Obviously, the drive lane can't have substantial planting or would have to be eliminated. So that leaves the plaza. And the reality is we just haven't yet defined exactly what we're going to do in the plaza. If this commission and planning staff, you know, requires that we have 15 feet of substantial planting between the sidewalk and into the plaza, that's what we'll do. I think that would be, it would be a disservice to the plaza because I think it cuts it off from the sidewalk of Evergreen. So do we do some planters that are 15 by 15 and then another swath that's just hardscape, another 15 feet wide, another planter? We'll end up with something along those lines, but it just hasn't been specified yet. And actually, and to Keith's credit, that's one of the things that he came back and asked us to do on our formal application is to give them more detail on the plaza. And that detail will include what, you know, substantial planting, we think substantial planting means. And again, that's an ambiguous term at best, is what is or is not substantial. If they wanted it to be 100% planting, they would have said 100% planting. But, you know, we're not opposed to substantial planting, whatever that means. So if the commission thinks we should have 80% planting, we'll have 80% planting. So between the commission and staff, whatever you come up with, we're happy to abide by. What I would prefer not to do is completely segregate the plaza from the Evergreen sidewalk. So that's, I think I've answered the three questions, whether, you know, to your detail or not, but that's always been our position on those three points, which has come up, and all of these things have been analyzed and vetted at great length over the last year or so.
Thanks, Aaron. Quick question for Keith. You mentioned that you got legal counsel on interpretation of Section E, or you had discussed that with them. I was just curious, who did you talk to? Was that
not in particular to Section E. I was referring to the question about how we apply the purpose statement.
Okay.
Because there's a part in the section that says, like, that staff consults with the Historic Preservation Commission and then about the purpose of the code. And then you go to the purpose and then you read the purpose statement and it leads you back to the standards. That was what I was referring to.
Sure, because it sounds like there is a lot of discussion around the sight lines and interpretation thereof. And I was just wondering if that was something that you got consultation on.
Not that specific part of it, but I would say that because there is not a no build area in there and it's clearly showing that you can do, you know, 75 to 200 feet, it's showing that something can be built in there. So, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sure. Hop in a second. I also want to thank everybody, behind us, members of the public that are here today. Obviously, the Academy is a very cherished building and what I would say is the most significant building, historic structure in our region. And on behalf of the Historic Trust, it's just a true privilege to be in the position of working to preserve this space and this beautiful asset. I think our hope today is to spend a significant amount of time and talk through a lot of the changes that have been made through the public process and some of the feedback of the Commission. In advance of that, I'm just going to give a little bit of background and just share with you a little bit of really what the Historic Trust kind of overall goal and hope and intent here is. As I believe you know, the Trust is a nonprofit organization. The Trust has been around for almost 20 years. And the Trust entered into a capital campaign in around 2012 for the acquisition of this building and the site. In 2015, the Trust closed on the acquisition of this property. It was, in the end, about a $5.5 million campaign where $5 million of that acquired the academy and the immediate 3.5 acres. And then the property around the academy to the north and to the west was acquired with debt back to the Hidden family, who has essentially owned who owned the property since acquiring it from the Sisters of Providence. So the trust has been the owner since about 2015. Really, the overall goal for the historic trust here is, how do we best preserve the Providence Academy building? How do we preserve the building in a way to where it's not just an old building that's sitting there without the stories being told? Frankly, I think one of the disappointments we've had in our community regarding the academy is very little has been kind of known or shared in our community about its significance, or the significance of Mother Joseph, or the significance that this building played in the work of Mother Joseph and in our faith community. And so it's been a very strong initiative of the Trust as an organization to really seek to bring vibrancy and activation to the site through through people, through programs, and through activities. Today, the building serves as a primary small business kind of incubator space. There's about 65 tenants that exist in that building today. And I credit the tenants today for their preservation of this building, because it's really their rent and contribution that is keeping the lights on and keeping this building preserved on an ongoing basis. Unfortunately, the financial elements aren't sufficient to support all the capital needs of this building, just because of all the deferred maintenance and needs. And so we've obviously sought other sources associated with that. But it's a very active building today. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to take advantage of the Providence Academy app that has been generated by the Historic Trust and Washington State University, but there's a great programmatic app that takes people through an augmented reality tour in the building to really get a stronger understanding of the building's history. This past week, the Historic Trust produced a week-long program called Common Ground, and had several thousand people in our community that took place in that program, of which many of those activities actually took place inside the academy building. So it's the goal and intention of the trust to really create a very activated space inside the academy. The organization has the privilege, thank you to the City of Vancouver, of serving as the master lessee of Officers Row in the West Barracks. And not to be critical by any means of Officers Row, but in a lot of ways, Officers Row is a drive-by experience. We've got some great public uses along Officers Row and great commercial and residential tenants. We've got a great restaurant and the Marshall House open as a museum-like space. But in a lot of ways, it's a drive-by experience for much of our community. And that is what the Academy has been as well. Our hope and our goal here through all the different changes and renovation and alterations is that the Academy isn't just a drive-by experience, but it's an experience where people want to park and they want to come in and they want to see and understand the Academy. It's amazing that people that are very familiar with the Academy may have attended meetings or had a counselor in the Academy building for 10 plus years and still at the same time never knew there was an incredible chapel in that building. So part of the goal of the organization is to really help tell the story of that history. In addition, the Academy really serves as the gateway into the historic site, including Officers Row, the National Park Service property, Pearson Airfield. And the goal here is, how can we create a connection with our community from downtown to the historic site, which in a lot of ways was divided when I-5 came through. And so how do we create that connection from the historic site as well into our downtown as a place of commerce and a place of heritage tourism as well? So a very critical piece. As you look at just the geographic location of the academy with the library across the street, the movie theater, it's an incredible place to be activated as a public space, both from an outdoor perspective and an indoor perspective, through weddings and events that take place, as well as the potential for some outdoor plaza space where the current restaurants and El Presidente exists. And last but not least, you know, there's a lot of significance and faith significance with the Providence Academy and work of Mother Joseph. And so being able to tell that story and being able to preserve the Academy to represent that portion of the heritage in our community is a real privilege. And I think that the Trust is pleased to say as well that earlier this year, the Trust secured a significant contribution from a donor to help tell the story through a tribute to Mother Joseph and potentially a shrine on the site to recreate a shrine that existed to really tell the story of the roots and of our of the Academy and in our community from a faith perspective. So all that to say, really the trust motivation here is preservation of the academy and its stories. Let's not just let it be an old building that stands and an old building that falls into disrepair, frankly, like the laundry and the boiler building in the northeast corner have. Let's create a building. Let's work together as a community to really preserve this building in a way that does its this building justice. So to walk through maybe a couple of the applications that are before you today, first off is the application associated with the El Presidente, a restaurant building. And if city staff doesn't mind maybe pulling up that application, I'd appreciate it. And maybe primarily just the aerial view of where the El Presidente building exists. That's great right there. You know, my understanding of the original intent of the Hidden Family, according to the brothers, was actually to build two buildings, one of which the El Presidente restaurant building on kind of the western side of the heart, as well as to build another building just like it on the eastern side. And, you know, I think as we see today and our goal today is how do we really open up that southern landscape to really create a connection with our community, a connection with Evergreen and the library. As part of the development on the western part of this property, it is actually, and I'm surprised that Aaron agreed to this, but I appreciate that he did. It will be Aaron and Marathon's responsibility to actually remove the El Presidente restaurant building for our community and for the academy site and really help return that to more of an open landscape space. We are in the process, and the Trust has worked with Olson Engineering and has done some landscape design work. And I think we still need to be refining that and what that landscape design looks like and welcome any feedback from the commission. But how do we create a landscape scenario and conditions in front of the academy that best showcases the academy, that creates a connection with the new construction on the western side with the academy? As you look at as you think about the academy in the western portion of that first floor, what exists there is the ballroom, which is a significant assembly space. And there's a potential for that assembly space to kind of flow into that outdoor active space to the south of the building. And so as we look going forward with the removal of the El Presidente building, really the hope and the intent here is to help create some outdoor space and at the same time highlight what exists today is really the only original landscape feature on that site, and that is the heart right there at the entry of the southern entry of the Providence Academy building. So we appreciate your feedback and consideration. I think that overall I've had no negative feedback on the removal of the El Presidente building other than a few people missing their watering hole that hasn't been there for 3 or 4 years. But I think the community overall is very excited about the opportunity for that to go away and better showcase the academy building. As I move on, if the commissioners have any questions about any of these applications, I'm happy to answer them. I think next I'd be happy to address the application around the western porch, essentially reconstruction. As you see it now, this is the current condition. Current condition, frankly, is a very deteriorated state that requires renovation in itself. As we look at this picture here, this obviously is the western entry into the building. It's an entry that frankly isn't used very significantly. It goes straight into a stairwell that goes up to the second and third floors. Really the hope and the goal here is how do we help showcase the character of the academy in a way that's more consistent with its original intent and original character. In this application, and if you don't mind maybe scrolling down through, there's a picture from around 1910 that reflects that historic character during that time period, and it's believed that that's more consistent with the original condition of the build of that essentially addition that was built in the 1890s. As you can see, there is a first floor and a second floor balcony. The architectural conditions are much more consistent with the southern balconies that were recently renovated, as well as the northern balconies that exist. You'll also note on the first floor, on the northern side, there was an existing stairwell on the northern side of that porch. And so the hope and the goal here is to help return this view to a more consistent architectural character with the rest of the building and historic intent. I understand, and Holly and I have had many conversations about the staircase off to the western part of this building. Yes, it is an original character feature and condition of that porch. The intent, and as you can see, the application before you is not to reconstruct that porch, but to use the northern, essentially, staircase as the primary entry or the entry onto the porch. Part of that is where the logistics are of parking on the northern side for the academy. There actually won't, I don't believe, will be won't be parking right up against the academy building right there, but there would be a sidewalk. And so for the purposes of pedestrian connectivity and that sidewalk, the intent is not to reconstruct that western porch. But I think as we look at the current conditions as it exists today, as well as look at the potential in the application that we're seeking feedback on, that really returns this to more of original condition. I think that the reconstruction of that second level porch and the architectural character is reasonable a mitigation for the lack of the stairwell that would exist on that western side, of which could always be constructed at some point in the future. So, again, the point here is how do we help really return the academy to more of its consistent character? And unfortunately today, I don't think that western entrance really complements the current heritage. Any questions on that before I move on? All right, maybe we can go back to the original presentation. So just a few things. I'd like to touch on economics because in the end there are economic elements that are driving different components to the preservation of the Providence Academy building as well as this development. I mentioned to you that the trust acquired the academy for approximately $5 million, and the trust essentially financed the acquisition of the property around it through a note from the sellers for $4.3 million. That note had an expiration on it of the first part of this year, and the trust has entered into a short-term extension. Really, the trust intent from the acquisition was to work with our development community to help improve that property. This site, as you can imagine, has a significant amount of liability associated with it and just the need for renovation and improvement. Here's a brief slide, frankly, that reflects about a $30 million investment that's required into the site. And frankly, I would say that this is probably an underestimated investment. This reflects, you can see on the left side of this slide, the uses of funds, the Providence Academy in itself. You'll see the $5 million acquisition price. There's about $15 million of improvements that I would say is required for the academy. And I would say that that's, again, I think a conservative estimate. I think as we continue to work through renovation of the academy, we continue to see that that number will likely grow. The trust just completed about a $2.1 million renovation of the roof as well as the southern porches, and intends either at the end of this year, first part of this next year, to start working on some interior renovation as well as some landscape improvements. So really, you know, the underlying hope and goal here is how do we best preserve the Providence Academy building? And the trust has put together a capital campaign committee that is focused on raising that $15 million and really invites the community to embrace that and participate and be a part of it. In addition to just the need associated with the academy is the property around it that the trust has had listed for sale since its acquisition. I mentioned to you that the trust acquired it at $4.3 million. Immediately upon acquisition, the trust began discussions with the city around the unimproved parking surfaces that exist. I'm sure you're aware that according to the current city code, those parking surfaces needed to be improved as of December 31, 2015. The city graciously entered into a development agreement with the trust to work through about a three-year process to really identify an appropriate development for that site to be able to address some of the needs associated with that parking. In the end, there's about, you know, $3 to $5 million of just parking surface expenses that exist today to be able to address the stormwater drainage, the parking, the utilities into that site that are out of compliance, and that development agreement expires at the end of the year. Those numbers don't frankly include the amounts that are required just to address the laundry boiler and smokestack structures as well. And I know we've had conversations in the past on the iconic nature of those buildings, but in addition to the preservation of the Providence Academy, we've got some significant liabilities associated with those structures as well. So from the point of acquisition or even prior to acquisition, the trust really has worked with a variety of partners and consultants to identify what are all the different ways and strategies that are available to foremost preserve the Providence Academy building, help maintain the focus on that as the preservation, as well as address some of these liabilities that exist around the academy, because this is about a $30 million campaign. The trust has entered into, frankly, negotiations with many, many developers throughout our whole region, as well as nationwide developers in the area of whether it's senior living, commercial, or multifamily residential. And the trust has been very pleased to enter into a relationship with Marathon Acquisition and Development, which is a Portland metro area developer that is held in very high regard, that frankly builds very quality projects. And I've been incredibly impressed with Aaron and his sensitivity to the academy at wanting to maintain the academy as a primary feature on this site and respect its historic character. The main thing, and Aaron gets this, and the main thing is the academy building. And while there's economics that play into how we best preserve the academy, there's economics that play into needs of the site, and a significant amount of what Aaron is doing here that benefits the academy is addressing some of these deficiencies in the site. So while Aaron is paying the trust $5.5 million for the acquisition of this western part of the property, in addition, he's investing several million dollars into the landscape, the removal of the El Presidente building, and the improvements of the parking services on this site that help address the liabilities that are required under the development agreement with the city. So this is a significant benefit to the academy building. This is a critical benefit to the academy building. It's one thing to fundraise $5 million for acquisition. It's another to fundraise $15 million for renovation. And through all the experience of fundraising that the Historic Trust has done, and I think the proof is in the pudding in the fundraising for the acquisition of the academy, it is not reasonable to fundraise for parking, asphalt surfaces, and stormwater drainage and lighting. And it also isn't financially feasible just to finance improvements to maintain it as an open parking lot. Improvements to the site are critical. Improvements through development, as you'll see today, are critical to the financial infrastructure of the site and the preservation of the academy. It's also critical to bringing activation and vibrancy to the site, to have people living on the site, to have a ground floor retail, to hopefully return Providence to its roots and having a clinic on the site. All those elements, we believe, is very critical to the preservation of the academy, so that the academy's history can be preserved and it becomes a place that is activated. So, yes, we have a question up here.
I do have a question. So the sale of this property to the developer, is the proceeds from that sale essentially going to be used just to relieve the debt that you have on that site?
The proceeds will be to retire the debt and be reinvested into this property.
Into the academy?
Correct.
So
academy and landscape.
How much money do you think will go towards the improvements in the academy from the sale of the property?
Well, I mean, so purchase, what is owed today is the $4.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately $5.5 million is proceeds to the academy site.
Okay.
You'll have naturally closing costs associated with that, but that's the investment that will go back into that site. And I think that, in addition, the developer is investing money in the removal of the restaurant building, the improvement of a lot of those unimproved surfaces as well. Any other questions before I move on? I would just like to say that, over the last several years, the trust has worked with a number of organizations and consultants in looking at all the different ways of preserving the academy and financing different tools. I know we've had conversations and at the last commission meeting talked about, transfer development rights solutions. We've looked into different financing structures for improvements. And truly, we believe that the best solution here, not just from a financial standpoint, but from a vibrancy standpoint, is through development. And so we're very proud of the development that's been brought forward and very appreciative of the feedback that the community has provided. In the end, I I believe that we're at a very critical point with the Academy building. The trust has invested several million dollars over the last several years in renovation. The state has recognized the significance of this building and has made a significant capital contribution to the last round of preservation of this building. And this building continues to need a significant amount of investment. This development provides a significant amount of investment. In addition, we've got a timeline associated with a development agreement that exists on the site with the city, where the city is requiring, frankly, application for improvements to this property. Otherwise, this property would cease to be used for parking and would just continue to exist as a potholed parking surface until otherwise addressed. There is not enough revenue on the site to be able to service the current debt in long term, and the note that currently exists on the site has a expiration on it, and I think it's very critical that that the trust work with our development community to improve this site so that the current conditions of that parking don't continue to exist. And in the end, going back to the comment about preservation of the Academy, proceeds going into the Academy, the trust is very ambitiously working toward a $15 million campaign to preserve the Academy. What we do not want to happen is the Academy to fall into further neglect and have similar conditions that the laundry boiler building have. Because of the financial structure of the site, that is a very likely scenario if a development does not take place and if this sale does not move through on the site. So I believe we are at a very critical juncture, and I think we have a wonderful development before us that meets the goals of the site, and I appreciate the support of our community and the ambition of the Historic Trust and the developer and your feedback in this. I also appreciate the public feedback that we've received, and we're going to be walking through that public feedback. The trust and the development team entered into about a 90-day period this last spring where we came before you in an informal fashion and received your feedback. We went through a series of open houses at the Academy and online feedback. The trust and developer engaged a third party, Berger ABAM, to help facilitate a process to obtain independent feedback and work with an advisory team that included a number of professionals in the preservation area, architectural area, and people in our region to really provide advice to the developer and direction on changes to be made. And so I'm excited for you to see those changes today, and I think they're changes that that very well complement this site. So before I move it on and maybe pass it on to Aaron, Holly, do you have any comments or additional statements
Not
you want to make?
Too new, but we'll answer things that come up as I can.
All right, Aaron, it's all yours.
So just really quickly before I dive into the proposed development, I just want to say there are easier sites in Vancouver to develop than this one. This is a complicated site, both from a simple site perspective, political attention, public attention. This, when it came across my desk, we truly saw it as an opportunity. There are other sites that are easier and likely more profitable to develop in Vancouver than this one. And we thought about what we were getting involved in very carefully. And the result of those conversations in our office was, why not help preserve the Academy? So we are really in this to help preserve the Academy. If we're going to pay $5.5 million and put a $40 million investment to any site, why not give that $5.5 million to a nonprofit and help improve a site that in the long run will help preserve the Academy? So we are really trying to do the right thing and help the community and help preserve the Academy rather than just building another development and making profit. So we really take that seriously. We would not have chosen this site if we were not interested in helping preserve the Academy. So just want to understand where we're coming from in this process. So with that, I'll dive into the proposal. And looking straight up, I'm now realizing my neck is going to hurt by the end of this. So mixed-use urban campus. The goal is to create a vibrant, activated campus with many different uses. And this site truly has a unique opportunity to have several different uses that you wouldn't have on any other site that you can come up with or think of. So everything from retail to restaurant to service to office to residential to public museum spaces, public event spaces, public open spaces, and a 7-acre site in an urban area. It's just a very, very unique and hard site to come by. There's nothing like it that I've come by. So having all of those different uses, people using this site at different times of day, coming and going, different days of the week, is very unique. And really, our hope is, and I think it will come to fruition in the end, is to create a mixed-use, vibrant, urban campus with people coming and going and using the site and it being a benefit to the community. So Academy and Aegis, a center of activity where modern-day uses merge with history. Providence Academy being a restored landmark and public museum that operates as a self-sustaining office building and event center. And so these are some of those uses that will come together with the development and the renovation of the Academy. Aegis, new mixed-use urban development representing guardianship of the community, and this is just some of the marketing and background and how we came up with the name, really being a nod to the sisters. The development stats, and some of you have already heard a lot of this, so I'll try not to spend as much time as I did in the past on some of these details that might not address historic preservation, but I will touch on them again because I know some of you weren't present at the last commission meeting and some of the public wasn't there as well. So the development stats, 2.2 acres in the western portion of the site, two buildings, 162,000 feet of gross square footage, 140 apartments, 12 to 13,000 feet of commercial space. We are talking to Providence Health Systems about taking roughly 6,000 square feet of that commercial space, which would be obviously a very good tenant and a very appropriate tenant for this site. The southernmost retail space being connected to the 5,000 square foot plaza, which will really activate and pull people into the site at that corner of C Street and Evergreen. The plaza will truly become a pedestrian gateway into the site. Some of the building amenities, we do community rooms, rooftop terraces, fitness centers, all the high-end amenities and features and finishes that we do in all of our developments we're going to bring to this site. So we really will have amenities and finishes that have not yet been seen in Vancouver. So from a residential standpoint, it will be a good asset to the community. So public benefits. We think the development brings a lot of public benefits to the table, the first being public open space, the 5,000 square foot plaza at the corner of C Street and Evergreen. Again, it will share or will be adjacent to the retail, which space on the southern end of the southern building, which we hope will be restaurant or cafe, and will spill out and use that plaza. So we have a canopy running down the center of the plaza, the northern half hopefully be used as cafe seating for a coffee shop or a restaurant, the southern half being benches and open seating for the public, partially covered by a canopy to give you some shade from the weather. And again, hopefully being the pedestrian gateway into the site, pulling people in to rest, use the site. Also, you know, renovating this site or creating it, vibrant campus, the hope is, which Mike mentioned, is this will be a gateway also to Fort Vancouver. So people going to and from the Fort Vancouver, from and to downtown, will hopefully stop and use the Academy and also use this public open space. Demolition of the non-historic restaurant building is essentially, in my opinion, a no-brainer. How it was built in that location and obstructing the Academy is a mystery to me. So obviously a huge public benefit in improving the view corridor from Evergreen. Public art, I'll just mention that now because I'm going to give you a little bit more detail on what we're thinking about the public art. Green certification, vastly improved pedestrian access. Right now you've got an unimproved site with essentially gravel parking lots, very few sidewalks to the extent they exist at all. They're broken up and certainly not inviting to pedestrians. Improved automobile access, promotion of bike commuting. We have very high-end bike amenities in our developments, which truly does make using bikes more convenient. So hopefully that will be a promotion of bike commuting, which helps we see as a public benefit. Removal of unattractive attributes, dead trees, broken sidewalks, unimproved surfaces, utilities, all of those things going away, and making the site just generally more attractive. Activation of an underutilized site, talked about that a little bit. There is essentially no connection now from the academy to any of the streetscapes at the site. It's totally disinviting. There's essentially no way to get from most of those sidewalks to the academy without walking across drive lanes and parking. So activating the site with retail uses on the ground floor and then pushing back our buildings to activate Evergreen and connect it with the library and the streetscape will be a huge public benefit. And we really think we'll pull people into the site and into the academy. So it's there. How many people actually go and come from the academy? It'll be nowhere near. It's nowhere near now what it will be once this is an activated site. So then a regional attractor. We touched on that a little bit. Between Astor Short Park, Main Street, the public library, the academy, and then Fort. Hopefully that brings together, pulls people to the city itself. And then obviously this is good for the public library across the street. So that's just the public benefits. Okay, so design. So we had two design guidelines that we formulated very early in the process, preservation and possibility and compatibility. Preservation and possibility, this is essentially the motto that we came up with for this guideline. This is really the 20,000-foot guideline to make sure we're doing the right thing, at least in our minds. It's very subjective with this site. Give a historic site new life while embracing its architecture, spirit, and history. Again, easier said than done and quite subjective, but we thought long and hard about these things to make sure that we're doing the right thing. So this was a general, again, 20,000-foot guideline that we were constantly coming back to and making sure that we are embracing the architecture, spirit, and history as best we can. Compatibility. This is the one in the weeds we were really coming back to constantly to try and ensure that every single decision that we made, every modification, change, design element, in some way created compatible juxtaposition. You want something that's some of it to be different, but at the same time, as much as possible to be compatible. And again, easier said than done, but we didn't just throw these buildings where we wanted and design them the way we did without having a lot of thought about compatibility. So we did this by employing modern needs, modern design techniques to accommodate modern needs while incorporating traditional elements to showcase the Academy's inspired history. Always coming back to this phrase, the first half of it, I've always used large windows as the example, is you can't build apartments today without having large windows. It might not be completely compatible with the Academy, but ultimately you need to incorporate some of those modern techniques and requirements to accommodate the modern needs of the tenants in the buildings. And then incorporating traditional elements and elements from the Academy itself into the design of the building, we did that as much as we possibly could. And again, subjective, but paying very close attention to every single element that we incorporated into these buildings. So I'm going to skip through the renderings really quick and get to some other portions, and I'll come back to the renderings. So public art, we're going to have two forms of art on the site. One is informative art, the other is abstract art. Informative art being conveying specific historical information about the site, and then abstract, making people think a little bit more about it. But in any event, the art will connect to this history of the site and hopefully convey some of the history to pedestrians as they're using the buildings and using the sites. So the first piece of this is the informative art, plaques, historic photos, maps, etc., displayed in an artistic narrative along the length of the western facades. So you can see here, this is the western facades of the new buildings. We were planning on using every other column to place some kind of element that will connect to the history of the Academy. I would be a proponent of this being somewhat of a timeline as you walk north as a pedestrian up C Street, but it might be plaques dedicated to different folks that were involved in the history of the Academy and supporting the community. It could be as simple as photos with explanation of what those photos are. But hopefully this will convey some of the history to pedestrians without actually having get into the site and get into the Academy. And hopefully pull people into the site by becoming interested in what's on the site. The second piece is abstract art murals. So at the entrance of 11th Street, we've created blank walls, both on the southern building and the northern building, that essentially hug 11th Street coming into the site off of C Street. And there we've created blank brick walls, and we would do some kind of 3D art on those walls. This also dresses up, which I think was some of the comments of this committee, to dress up that entrance off of C Street at 11th Street. So you can see here in these renderings, those are those blank brick walls, and you can see the somewhat creepy 3D art that we've imposed on these walls. So we would do, and again, none of this is specifically defined, but these are the locations and the types of things that we're going to do. So some type of 3D art to make this entrance more interesting, both from the automobile and pedestrian perspective. Hopefully pull people in and be inquisitive about the site itself. The last piece is going to be larger-than-human-scaled abstract sculpture of Mother Joseph. So a nod to Mother Joseph and her legacy in that southern plaza, southwest corner plaza at C Street and Evergreen. And these are just some examples. Again, abstract, not specifically her likeness. These are transparent sculptures that are created from words that relate to the person's legacy that the sculpture represents. And you can see here that we've shown it in the plaza. Again, we don't know exactly what this is going to be, but these are the three types of art that we'll do on the site. And that is the details of that are not going to be left to me because it wouldn't work out so well. But we'll obviously work with the Providence Archives and the Historic Trust has staff that will help us along on what specifically we incorporate into the art budget and how we go about doing that, what we want to convey to the public, and make sure that we're not conveying the same thing that's already built into the academy or the plans for the interior of the academy. So that's some of the public art. The public engagement process, Mike already touched on this. The only thing I would say is that we had also comments now from the CCRA that we've kind of digested. And we also were talking, which Mike didn't mention, with city staff throughout this entire process. So long before we actually submitted this application, we've been talking to city staff, and their third-party architect has been analyzing this and providing us feedback as well. So this, we really believe, made the development better. We and our development team certainly don't know everything. So to have a lot of third parties give us feedback and then have a panel of experts, of architects and historic preservationists and designers to give us feedback and digest all of those public comments was very helpful. So that's the public process. And then some of the major design revisions. So there's a lot more revisions that we made, but I'm only going to touch on the big major revisions because we'll be here for a long time if we go into the deliberation of all the comments that were received and how we went about deciding what to do and what not to do and some of the more minor revisions that we made. This is the biggest, which we've touched on a bit, is pushing the building back 16 feet at the corner of C Street and Evergreen. And I think we're at a total now of 58-foot setback. And this did improve that view corridor. When the building was further north, you were basically cut off at the intersection of the north and the west facades of the academy looking at this. So it did improve the view corridor to the academy. And we did lose density, and the consequence of that is we added a sixth story to the northern building. We figure from the pedestrian perspective, if you have that kind of mass, there's really no distinction between five stories and six stories. So to maintain economic feasibility, we shrunk Building A and added more density to Building B. So that's how we went about providing a better view corridor and bringing down the scale and mass of Building A a little bit. Ancillary benefit of that change is also to ended up increasing the plaza by 1,300 square feet, which gets us to 5,000 square feet. Change the balcony railings. We originally went back and forth between glass and steel black pickets. Glass is often interpreted as a more modern design aesthetic element. So we did go back and forth on that quite a bit. Part of the issue with pickets is from the tenant's perspective, it's not as nice from the inside because you just have that obstructing your view out of the apartment. But we did change from glass to steel pickets, which incorporates the element of the steel, black steel on the front porch of the academy. It also creates horizontal bands in the building, which we think helps ground the buildings themselves. So the arches from the windows, we looked at this long and hard. There's no way to arch the apartment's windows. We created renderings of arching the storefront windows, all of them, some of them, and it looked very forced and faux. So in the end, we scrapped arching the storefront windows. It just didn't look right. Again, a subjective opinion, but basically the whole design team didn't like the idea of arching those windows. So rather, we incorporated arches in things like the canopies at all the entrances. The large canopy in the plaza is arched, and you can see those arched windows in the background. So hopefully those little nods are tying the two buildings together. Aligning the columns, the ground floor columns, with the structure above. And this was a great comment because it's very hard to identify these things at times. So just from and we talked about this previously, from the very beginning, the goal of the design of these developments was to keep the design as simple as possible, as little, and we have to have some articulation, otherwise the boxes or the buildings just become large boxes. But don't over-articulate the buildings. Don't have too many material changes to the buildings. Don't do too many different colors. Don't have stark colors. And all of that was intended to not detract from the academy. So the opinion was the more articulation, the busier the facades of these buildings became, the more you're going to detract from the academy. So one of the things here was just aligning those columns at the ground floor with the structure above, because when they were offset, they made the facades significantly busier. So that was a good identification by somebody that we incorporated. So changing some of the materials to red brick. So you can see here over the entrance on the east side of building A, we brought the red brick all the way up to the roof line and set the building back. So there's about a 3-foot depth change there that's providing the building some articulation. So there was a debate always from the very beginning of how much red brick to incorporate into these buildings. The buildings are 75% brick, so you can't totally see on these renderings, but most of the tan material you see on the buildings is brick. But this change was to pull that red brick all the way up to the roof line to let it tie a little bit more with the academy. So precast concrete sills to the storefront windows. This was a change made to try and tie the academy stone window sills to the sills on these buildings. You couldn't do it on all the apartments. But from a pedestrian perspective, that makes a significant difference. It also breaks up the endless red brick that you had going up C Street, so it provides a little bit of contrast. We also carried that element into the parapet so you could see it from a distance. And again, that with the concrete balconies and overhangs and the concrete sills on the ground floor ties to the stone sills at the academy. This was a great suggestion that came from city staff, and that was to raise up the portion of parking directly adjacent to the plaza to be flush with the plaza and essentially have curbless parking there and pull the material across that parking lot as well. So other than obviously the cars there, from a pedestrian perspective, it will really help it feel cohesive with the academy. And then the opportunity to close off that parking and having one tied-in large plaza that ties to the academy is very attractive for events. So that was a great suggestion that we incorporated. So incorporating brick elements into more of the walkways. So this is another way to dress up the entrance at 11th Street to make these walkways red brick pavers as well, and then some of the crosswalks you can see in the distance there as red brick. You can't see all of it, but we incorporated more red brick pavers into the hardscape. So from a pedestrian perspective, you're surrounded by a significant amount of red brick. Not too much. The landscaping, I think, will soften it. But from the facades on the ground floor of the buildings, the hardscape, and the academy itself, red brick making most of the site cohesive. Again, these are the blank walls that we created. A lot of this was windows before, but we eliminated windows to create blank walls for public art, again, to dress up this access at 11th Street. And then one of the other things that a lot of people had questions about, what's going to happen on the academy site. So we refined the landscaping plan for the academy site. It's not set in stone. It hasn't yet been applied to go through the city if that's necessary. But we spent more time thinking about it and how the landscaping will be cohesive between both sites along Evergreen, because that'll be important at the end. So we did that as well. So those are some of the major design revisions. I'll go back and flip through the renderings relatively quickly and talk about some of the compatibility that we talked about last time. And again, I won't go through all of the other compatible elements, but a lot of the stuff that we had done initially to make the sites compatible, these are just the changes to help the compatibility, but what we did initially. So, and this is the existing site from a bird's eye perspective. Obviously, removing the El Presidente building will help everything. Bird's eye view of the new site and some of the compatibility elements. Obviously, the plaza will help tie the two sites together. Curbless parking and the bread brick pavers. Preservation of the view corridors we've talked about already along 12th Street, 11th Street, and then on Evergreen, significantly improving the view on the southern scape of the academy. This is the southeast perspective, bird's eye. This really gives you an idea of the palettes working together. So colors, both all very neutral colors that work together. Again, 75% brick, so materiality, palette, all cohesive between the buildings. Let's see, some other elements. Kind of already touched on a letter. Here you can see the clean lines of the building. So again, if we had over-articulated these buildings, we would fear that it would just detract too much from the academy.
This Aaron, if I could just make a quick comment here. I think one of the things that the design team has been really sensitive to is we're looking at some viewscapes that, frankly, unless you're in an airplane or maybe happen to be up on the library, some of these viewscapes are not reality. It's consistent with how the development may be built. But really, I think the design team is really focused on how are you going to experience this site as a pedestrian. And so I think that's just an added comment.
Yeah, and that's why I always come back to talking about the pedestrian perspective, because that's really what's in our minds most important, is how are people using this site and how do they feel while they're using this site? They're never going to be at this perspective. You have some of these perspectives from the library, but frankly, what we're concerned about is passerbys, both from a pedestrian and auto access, and then how people feel while they're walking through and using the site, and whether it's inviting and it feels cohesive and compatible. This gives you a little bit better idea of how it'll feel as a pedestrian, but again, not in the site and next to the buildings. Bird's eye view from the southern scape, and that same view from the pedestrian perspective. This is the view again from this intersection of C Street and Evergreen, and you can see here just the activation that that plaza really has the potential to create and pull people into the site. Along the western side, the facade, again, people coming and going from the site. This is a zoom in of that, and some of those other compatibility elements you can see here. And this, I'll wrap it up with this slide. Pilasters, so brick pilasters. These are some traditional elements that we wouldn't typically incorporate into a building. Soldier courses, those precast sills, the arches, the pilasters, the steel pickets. All of these elements are traditional elements to make the buildings feel less modern from the pedestrian perspective and more traditional. So, and there's a lot of other things that we've gone through in the past, but I'll leave it at that and take questions if the commission has any.
So, Aaron, as you wrap up, I'd just like to bring us back to the why. And it's really about how do we best preserve the academy building? How do we address some of the financial economics of that site that need to be addressed? And how do we bring the vibrancy so that the community can experience the academy in perpetuity? The academy is an incredible building, and it's got incredible uses today. But I think we all look forward to the potential of the academy, look to have a site that is improved, that really showcases the academy appropriately, and really, as I like to think to myself, I want to make Mother Joseph proud with this project. She was incredibly innovative with building this building. Everybody has their interpretation of what Mother Joseph would want here. But in my opinion, the number one is the preservation of the academy, and that's our ultimate focus here. And I think that this development really complements that preservation and brings the vibrancy that will also create the long-term case for the preservation of the academy so that that building continues for future generations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'll open it up to questions for Aaron, Mike, or Holly from the commission. But before I do, I just want to remind you that we're going to treat this kind of like a public hearing, so we still have to hear from the public before we actually get into the deliberation part. So let's be pointed with our questions just to be efficient with our time, and then after we hear the public comment and some of their perspectives, then we'll really get into the deliberations and our specific recommendations, if we could. So with that, do we have any questions?
This doesn't necessarily have to do with this development, but just kind of looking forward, what are the plans for the north and east and laundry building and, you know, the smokestack and all of that, just because, you know, as we deliberate on this development, I'd like to kind of be able to think forward what the future holds for that portion of the property.
No, I think that's a great question, and I think you may know that a year ago we started out really trying to focus on that northeastern part of that property, and it became incredibly complicated. And you know, part of our real goal here is how do we maintain those character-defining features on that site? And some of the feedback that we received from the commission was that iconic nature of that of the smokestack. That smokestack is about a $700,000 cost to seismically support that. For that smokestack to continue to exist, there's going to have to be seismic infrastructure added to that. And so the trust is focused really on a go-forward basis on how do we address that laundry boiler and smokestack. Is there a potential for future development on the northern part of that site? Yes. Is there a master plan on that site? They're really the trust and the developer has not landed on what improvements would really look like on the northern part of that site, or whether it would just be continue to be used as a primary surface parking solution. Obviously, we've had a lot of discussions with Aaron on that, but there's significant challenges with those historic structures that are going to influence that, and I will just say that that's not defined as of today.
Is the northern portion of the site, is the intent to always keep that with the academy site, or could that be sold off?
It could be sold off.
How big is that?
Well, I think in the end it may be about 80,000 square feet in that northeastern
portion. Just shy of another 2 acres.
Okay.
So, and one thing I'll add on the economics is that us paying Mike and in turn paying the trust and in turn paying off the debt includes that portion of the property. So that property ends
includes up paying off the debt on that portion.
On the northern portion of the property. So it ends up any proceeds from a sale of that portion would be on top of what we discussed on your question of how much would go back into the academy.
Good questions.
And in my very brief tenure so far, one of the things I'm tasked with is looking at the smokestack laundry boiler building, and I've started collecting information from around the country on best practices on smokestacks, and so it's just a very, very beginning, but that's one of the things I'm looking at.
And we've spent time looking at the smokestack as well. It's iconic and would be great to preserve. It is a complicated element of this site.
I think you guys can appreciate the focus today is on fundraising to be able to stabilize the academy building versus, while very historic, some non-income producing structure of the smokestack. So the focus today is on the academy.
I have one question. So have you reached out to the Historic Tax Credit Office at the National Park Service about this plan? About this proposal specifically to get their feedback on it?
Not the National Park Service. We've obviously had conversations with Nick Van from DAP associated with this.
I guess that's one of the concerns that has come up for me is, so I was just at the National Association of Preservation Commissions, and I got to talk to one of the people from the National Park Service. And one of the things about historic preservation tax credits is if you do something on your site that is not compliant with their standards, you become ineligible for them for 5 years. And as Nick Van at DAP has said, they're sticklers for their standards. And this really doesn't meet the standards that they use for tax credits. So you've said there's a $15 million improvement that's needed on the academy. Tax credits are worth up to 20% of that. You'll have to see how it actually gets structured. But that means that whatever financial gain you get out of this, there's up to $3 million of restoration of the actual academy at risk. And you don't know whether or not this is going to impact that.
So my only feedback on that is through all my discussions with Nick at DAP, this project does not jeopardize the eligibility of the academy as a historic structure for historic tax credits. So that's the confirmation that we've received from Nick.
So Nick said that explicitly?
Explicitly.
Because Nick said to me explicitly that this does. When I talked to him in May, he said that the concerns about siting and scale are actually things that they'll be looking at. And the National Park Service, in his words, has the tendency to overreach on new construction. So, you know, he told me that those concerns are things that could jeopardize the historic tax credits.
I'm only responding to my conversation I had with him.
Well, I think that's, you know, I know that this doesn't get to the actual code, but that was one of, I think, a pretty important, because you've spent a lot of time talking about the economics. That's a pretty big economic issue.
I think that's a fair point, because that could certainly, you know, help to defer the costs and possibly save the smokestack. So maybe we could advise Mike and team to follow up on that and follow up with Nick and get clarification.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Historic Trust is happy to. I would say that the Trust has also engaged advisors that have really researched the eligibility of this project associated with that, and I think, as our commissioner would know too, you don't realize 100% of that 20% benefit on a project, especially when you've got a very complicated structure with a nonprofit ownership as well. And so the benefits of a historic tax credit project, the end yield is not necessarily 20% net amount. And so it's complicated.
Yeah,
and I know the Trust will continue to consider it as
And we don't want to get into any ex parte communications, as Sarah just reminded me. So,
well, we're advisory on this one. So
We are, and I was just bringing up the point that one part we skipped in this pseudo public hearing, public meeting thing that we've been thrown into tonight would be to discuss if we have had ex parte communications or if we have conflicts of interest, that sort of thing. We didn't actually bring that up tonight yet. So,
well, it's not a public hearing.
Exactly.
We're not making any binding decisions.
Public. It's an interesting night for our procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And so, just to be fair, if we've had a conversation on the Providence building or this project, we probably should mention that as well at the beginning of the meeting, or have mentioned it so that the applicant had a chance as well to address, you know, any concerns as well. So it goes both ways. So just to be, I guess, open, when we got to the portion of the project where we discussed the porch remodel, my family has an ornamental metal company, and I found out yesterday that they're actually working on that porch remodel. So something I found out. I don't think that affects my decision on this entire project, but when we discuss the porch, I'll just recuse myself.
We're only offering advice, but so I think your point is well taken, Sean. Thank you for that. Are there any other questions for the applicant before we take public comment?
I had one more about the western porch. I don't know if you can put that up. So the steps are going out, and I understand the reason for that. But it looks like the historic reconstruction style goes across the entire porch.
Yeah, no, the other one, the last one.
Oh. I missed the big discussion about stairs that we had at the last meeting with the library. But I think one issue that we have here is that it is so faithful to the historic material that's there that it actually gives the impression that it is historic. And the reconstruction, I don't think that that's such a big issue, but I do think there's an issue with it making it look like the reconfiguration of that porch is the original configuration of that porch because it's so faithful. And so it's, I think through materials differentiation, you know, there are ways to show that there is a change there, even if it's just, you know, where those stairs used to be. You know, especially since, you know, Keith is right, this was not the principal entrance. But if you read the National Register nomination, you know, the nomination actually spends more time talking about the site than the building, and it talks about the interrelationships between the building and the site. And so here we have a principal entrance to the academy, but not the primary, so a major one, just, you know, even if it's not the main one, and a significant connection to the site, and because it's this straight axial connection, and then this composition of the facade, because this is one of the secondary facades, and it's a formal facade. It's not just, you know, this isn't just the back of the building. So I think that if a change needs to be made to the porch, and it's not there can't be reconfiguration of the change, but there should be something about it that makes it clear that what's going on here isn't actually historic.
I completely agree. And one of the things in the, I think this made it into the final report, is that the trust will plan to respect the Secretary of the Interior's suggestions about making sure that there not only are the changes documented, but I would also advocate for there to be some kind of public representation there of what it used to look like and how this has changed. You know, perhaps an interpretive panel with some photographs or that kind of thing. But it's a tricky site because we do have good representations of what was there. We don't want to make it exactly the same, as you noted. That also doesn't meet the Secretary's standards, but also trying to make it visually blend in and respect what was there originally.
I guess it kind of gets into the discussion part, but, you know, just replacing that one section with a different material that holds your interpretive sign, you know, that shows it, something as simple as that. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good idea. Mm-hmm.
Those are very realistic changes that could be incorporated.
We did spend quite a lot of time talking about the existing stairs, which there's just no exacting documentation as to when they were put up. It's pressure-treated wood. Obviously, it's somewhat contemporary, but it predates the trust's ownership of the property. There aren't any real good records as to when it happened, but they're not in good shape now, and obviously not the original material.
Thank you.
A quick question about the plaza. It's an important element to your design. I was curious if there's a thought about how that plaza would be used. Is it, if it's a kind of a more viewed as a pass-through space, or as a space where events could occur, and, you know, you talked about activating the site and activities on the site. What are the thoughts on that?
Hopefully both. It'll be an opportunity for people to sit and rest and enjoy outdoor space, but also pass-through space that'll pull people into the site. Again, we have that canopy running east-west in the center that would essentially divide the plaza in half, the northern half being utilized by whatever that retail restaurant space would be, and hopefully being very active by people using it for lunch and dinner and sitting outside having coffees and drinks. And then the southern half essentially being for pedestrians to sit and rest and enjoy. But we're working on defining all of this. It's large enough at 5,000 square feet, I think, to have both, so that you can have benches, landscaping, people sitting out and eating, but it also be a pass-through space. But it's not yet defined.
Thank you, Rock.
Well, we have a number of people in the room tonight who've been waiting patiently. So maybe we could take a look at the comments that we have. Do you have a number of how many people signed up, Jackie?
There's probably 19 or 20 names, but not everyone marked the yes box.
Thank you very much, everybody. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Before we get started, I just want to make a real quick comment before we take public comments. And that is that as the public comments by email and writing have come in, those are forwarded to us by community planning. So we have an opportunity to read them. And I just want to say that the Historic Preservation Commission takes these comments and these sentiments very seriously. We recognize just what an important historical asset the Academy building is and the underlying history of it is to our community. I just want to share one thing very quickly before we get started, and this is from the National Park Service, the Secretary's standards, which advise historic preservation commissions. Just to provide a little bit of context of how we look at this and the process that's occurred prior to this meeting that Mike did a very good job of explaining. This is from the Guidelines for Treatment of Cultural Landscapes and Factors to Consider when Selecting an Appropriate Treatment. A treatment is a physical intervention carried out to achieve a historic preservation goal. It cannot be considered in a vacuum. There are many practical and philosophical variables that influence the selection of a treatment for a landscape. These include, but are not limited to, the extent of historic documentation, existing physical conditions, historic value, proposed use, long and short-term objectives, operational and code requirements, e.g., accessibility, fire, security, etc., and anticipated capital improvement, staffing and maintenance costs, the impact of the treatment on any significant archaeological or natural resources should also be considered in the decision-making process. Therefore, it is necessary to consider a broad array of dynamic and interrelated variables in selecting a treatment for a cultural landscape preservation project, of which this is one. So it's a complicated issue. As Mike described, we have a building that is greatly in need of maintenance, and we need to come to a solution as a community. And so the process that has brought us here is one solution that is workable and is coming within our reach. And so as a Historic Preservation Commission, it is with these principles and these guidelines in mind that we will be offering our commentaries tonight. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to public comment, and we will take comments in the order that the citizens who are here tonight have signed up for them. And Sarah is going to help me in terms of the order.
Should we ask how many people actually want to make comment to see if we do need to limit their time? It is on the list? Okay.
Steve Becker.
Do you all want the timer on?
Yes, maybe that's a good idea, Jackie. Maybe we should limit to, say, 3 minutes, please.
Good evening. My name is Steve Becker. I'm the executive director of Vancouver's Downtown Association. I come with copies of a resolution that our board passed in June in support of this project. In my work with the Downtown Association, I meet with Main Street managers from all over the state of Washington, and we are really the envy, I think, among Main Streets for resources like this, exactly like this. But we also know that this is really, really hard. Our last Main Street meeting was in Colfax, Washington, and we were taken on an incredible tour of boarding houses that go back more than 100 years, of a theater that goes back close to 100 years. And they're owned by absentee landlords who have absolutely no desire to invest in protecting those properties. We think that this proposal is what's right for the Academy, for a resource that is vital to our community. We also think that this proposal is what's best for downtown Vancouver. We're constantly approached by people who tell us they want to live downtown. They want to live in a walkable community, but they also want to live in a community that has unique textures and a historical context that you simply cannot find anywhere else. As someone who grew up in this community, I remember about the time the Academy closed, right down the street, the Castle Theater was knocked down and turned into a parking lot. Beautiful, historic, meaningful structures can be lost if we can't have sufficient investment and passion around their future. We think that this proposal will serve that need, and we very much support it. I'll hand these the resolution to your staff. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Mike True? We just heard from you, so I'm like, this would be the same Mike True, right? Already. Moving down.
Yeah.
Carolyn Plenty?
Hello. I'm a graduate of Providence Academy. I graduated in 1966, the last year, and my family has some very deep roots here, as many people in the community do. My grandmother was born on Bell's Mountain in Hawkinson area and came to the Academy after her mother died in 1908. She graduated in 1916. My mother came to the Academy in the 1930s, and graduated in 1943. And then I'm part of the tradition as well. So Providence Academy is like a family home to me, as it is to a lot of people in the community. Not just me, but a lot of us who grew up in the community, because we were family in the community. Now currently, I'm a volunteer with the trust as the head docent at Providence Academy. And I am recruiting and training people, volunteers, to help work in the Academy building, to take people on tours, individuals and groups. I tell them about Mother Joseph and the sisters and stories of Providence Academy. I also do research, and this week I was able to interview and get an oral history of my third grade teacher, a sister of Providence, who celebrated her 90th birthday. I'm very personally very impressed with the work of the Historic Trust, their sincere commitment, their honesty, and their passion for saving the Academy and telling the story of Mother Joseph. Last week, the Trust sponsored a program called Common Ground. This week, in just the first 3 days of the week, there's been an upsurge in interest in people just walking in off the street, 10, 12 people just coming in at a time for a tour of the Academy to hear about Mother Joseph. And often when people come in, they ask, what is this place? I've always wondered. I've never been here. So is Providence Academy our best kept secret? The Trust plans for development will bring more people into the Providence Academy property and open the property up for everyone to know and enjoy. Mother Joseph was a pragmatist. She did whatever was needed to accomplish her goals. Her original design of the building was in the shape of a cross. Less than 10 years after the building was built, the decision was made to add 100 feet to the west. She was disappointed, but she designed it, and it was built. She also added to the north of the building to accommodate boarders. At one time, the property had outhouses, a garden, chicken coops, play structures, and other buildings. Buildings were added as needed and came down when they fell down. Mother Joseph was humble. She would not want Providence Academy to be a shrine to her, but to be something useful for the community. Providence Academy, from the beginning, had multiple uses: a school, a hospital, an orphanage. When the Hiddens purchased Providence Academy from the sisters in the 1970s, they put in offices and found uses for the spaces. For all of its history, Providence Academy has been a multi-use property. The new development will continue what Mother Joseph started and help us to tell her story into the future years to come. Thank you.
Pat Giolotta.
The problem with coming late is everybody's already said whatever you want to say. But I heard the word pragmatic, and that's what we have here. I'm a veteran of another great historic rehabilitation there, along with Mayor Higginson behind me here. We obtained Officers Row, which at that time was derelict, neglected, and had been for many years. It was going to take a lot of work. It was going to take a lot of money. And people were going around saying, if you like Whoops, if any of you remember Whoops, if you liked Whoops, you're going to love Officers Row. And we looked at, should we have it all businesses and restaurants? Should it be museums? What should it be? But we did rehabilitate Officers Row. We did not restore Officers Row. We rehabilitated it. And today it's a jewel. People love to take their visitors there to see it. They drive by it. They've got a good view of it as they drive by it. And they've got a good view of the academy as they drive by it. And, of course, coming from the west, you can't see it because of the restaurant, and that's going to come down. This is a use that's vital for our community, is to use this building, to have it open to the public, not to drive by, but to have weddings, to have parties, to have meetings, to have political rallies, to have commemorations, to celebrate, to use, to love. This plan will do it. Without it, the parking lot will continue to deteriorate. It can't be used as a parking lot. It's gravel. That use will go away. And then what will be built there? Perhaps something that does not have this sensitivity. This is a good plan. It's a good plan with good people running it. And it's a good, sensible use that returns it to the community. Thank you.
John McDonough.
Good evening. Mr. Chair, Commissioners, thank you for your patience this evening. My name is John McDonough. I'm here this evening representing the Greater Vancouver Chamber of Commerce, the largest association of businesses in Southwest Washington, and come with the full endorsement of our board for the trust project to develop the site to the west of the academy so that they can continue with their rehabilitation of the academy building. I was taken, Mr. Hines, with your reference to the secretary's guidelines, especially the wide-ranging considerations, because you all know far more about the historic preservation side of this project than I ever will. But from the economic development standpoint, I think the trust is to be applauded for their vision in acquiring the academy, for their commitment to bring it back to a vital space in the community. It certainly is an icon, historic icon in our community, and for their approach, this plan to assist in the funding of that rehabilitation. On the wide-ranging consideration side, the development of the West property will provide critical housing in our downtown core. It will downtown with the commercial and retail space that is anticipated in those facilities, and if for no other reason, the improvement to the streetscape along C Street would be a tremendous welcome improvement. So we hope that you endorse it and recommend it to the City Council. And thanks for your time.
Rob Freed.
I'd like to shed a little light on the view shed from the corner of C and Evergreen. I was on the Historic Preservation Commission when we developed the Historic Overlay District, and I would say we never considered the view from that corner because of the presence of the El Presidente restaurant. That this is, as I recall, we looked at it from, we saw the view shed from the southeast corner. There was no conflict there with other buildings in the way. And when we developed the overlay district, the because of the presence of El Presidente, we just never considered that. Because of that, I guess I feel remiss and as being a commission member then and looking at the current project, and I think it's important that the view of the project take into consideration what the viewscape should be at this time. And I would be a proponent of using the same view shed from both the southeast and southwest corners looking towards the academy. I also agree with Alex's comment. I think when I went to the first public meeting, I was struck by the fact there's no master plan for the project. And I get concerned in seeing one project proposed on the west side and not knowing what else is going to be developed on the property. And we're talking about perhaps piecemeal development of the property. And I want to see all the historic buildings to the northeast and east of the academy preserved. And I think it's important to have a master plan to drive the whole project. I also agree with the letter that was sent in by the Clark County Historic Museum, Society and Museum, that the academy property be put on the local register, that the trust engage in the nomination. And this way, I think it cements the relationship between the trust and the commission going forward and reviewing other projects on the property. And also, it may make available other grants because of the status on the local register. Thank you.
Royce Pollard.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. My name is Royce Pollard. In 1984, many of you not even born, I was in Korea with my wife and two sons. A friend of mine in the Pentagon called me and said, "Hey, you're lucky. You want to go to Fort Lewis, Washington. You're going to be assigned to Fort Lewis." I said, "Yay." And then about 2 days later, I get a call from some colonel at Fort Lewis, Washington, who said to me, he said, "We don't have any room anymore here for old, cranky lieutenant colonels. But how would you like to be the commander of Vancouver Barracks?" And I said, "I'll take it, but I didn't know that we had anything in Canada." I got to tell you, I was shocked when I came here. I loved the barracks. I loved Officers Road. And I met some people in the city who energized me about what the future might be for the city. But I have to tell you, after about 27 years in the Army, I didn't even know about Vancouver Barracks, nor did I know about General George C. Marshall, or the Choctaw Fight, or General O. O. Howard, or the Nez Perce Indians, or the fact that in the 1860s, there were 9 military Medal of Honor recipients living on Officers Row in Vancouver, Washington. No other Army installation in the world ever had as many at one time. And that's just part of the history. You know, I mean, I'm very interested in the military history, but I'll tell you, I realized fairly quickly that we had great history here that we weren't paying attention to. No one was. And so I did a lot of research and was very interested in it. And Pat Gelada bending my ear, of course, helped a lot. I came to the conclusion that, quite honestly, we have two of the most important historic sites in Washington State here, the Academy and the Historic Reserve, the Barracks, the Park Service, Officers Row, and not just to the state of Washington. I believe that these two sites are important not just to the West Coast of the United States, but to all of America. The birthplace of America in the Pacific Northwest started at this place with the arrival of the United States Army, and I don't remember the date, but Pat would remember when a guy by the name of Major Hathaway played a plane of the American flag above the British fort up on the high ground. And I have to tell you, I'm convinced, and I'm not a planner, so I leave that to you, but you know, there's a great history here, and I want to just share with you very quickly. I hope some of you remember the name Ed Lynch and Dolly Lynch. Ed and Dolly Lynch absolutely loved this community. They loved this region. And Ed just absolutely loved history, not just military history. He was an engineer. He bored me to death with his stories about trains and antique farm equipment. And if there was a farm equipment display in this community in Clark County that needed help, or a railroad, Ed Lynch donated money to every one of those things. And Ed Lynch, during his time, I recall, used to take at least, I think, 10 to 15 people a year to Williamsburg. Ed was one of the prime supporters of Williamsburg. And he may have been setting us up at the time, but he took us there and showed us around, and we had access to everything. And he showed us at, I don't know, that's the north end or the south end, this wonderful little development of shops and stores, which was the economic driver for the money that they needed in addition to what they were getting to run Williamsburg. And I have to tell you that Ed Lynch told me in my face a number of times later on, Royce, we need to get the Academy, because it can become, just what that little development, it's not a little development now, it's a big development, at Williamsburg does, it provides the economic engine for what we want to do to preserve our history for future generations. We're going to lose it if we don't do something for it. And I believe that Ed was absolutely right. You know, I think that there is something here that we can do will have an impact for a long, long time. You know, there's even an Army connection with the Academy. Father Joseph conned the Army into helping her build that place. You
know? Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I hope you will approve it.
And thank you for making some of us feel much younger.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Next is Tom, and I actually can't read your handwriting very well. So, oh, okay. Rather than slaughter your last name.
Thank you for allowing me this opportunity. My name is Tom Knappenberger, and I've lived in Vancouver for 23 years. And before that, I worked for the Idaho Statesman newspaper in Boise, and I covered their downtown redevelopment, which was a long, torturous effort that went on for more than 20 years, and it was eventually successful. So when I moved to Vancouver, I felt like, oh, my goodness, I've gone back 20 years in time. So I followed what's been going on here very keenly for the 23 years I've lived here, and commend Mayor Pollard and Councilwoman Gelada and the rest and Mayor Higginson for their efforts, not only with the barracks, but with Esther Short Park and all that's happened since then. And, of course, when I came here and saw the Providence Academy, I thought, my goodness, what a wonderful gem asset that we all recognize this place to be. And it's been 23 years, and we are still trying to save it and develop it and rehabilitate it and repurpose it.
So I'm excited that the trust is taking this initiative to find funds to keep and develop the academy, make something out of it. I assume that this is the best way to do it is to place two office buildings in here to provide the revenue that will provide for the maintenance and improvements at the academy. I want to say I'm 90% excited about this. I have a concern from what I learned in covering Boise's downtown redevelopment about psychology and people flow and traffic flow and all that we're putting these buildings up here that will form an effective wall on the west side of the academy. It already has the trench known as I-5 on the east side. Having said that, if you look at the orientation of these buildings, they oriented, of course, toward the river. So the academy is oriented to the south. The library, however, is oriented toward the west. So the academy looks at the side of the library rather than at the front of it. So if you're putting other buildings in here, there's not a logical way like there was at Esther Short to group the buildings. So that leads me, that concern then leads me to a question was there thought given to putting that first building, the southern building, up on the northern parking lot, perhaps perpendicular facing, I believe that's 12th Street, which would then open up the view to the academy, but still allow for the two office buildings that are needed to finance this? That's a question I have. Are questions allowed, or are you just... Okay. And the other question I have then is on the rest of the site, as was mentioned earlier, the north side and the east side. We're going to have, if this goes forward, a highly developed west-southwest corner to the property with a fairly undeveloped north side and a undeveloped east side. So I was wondering if there's a comprehensive plan for what's going to happen to the entire academy footprint here.
That was a question that we asked earlier.
I have more questions than answers. Right.
We can.
I'm 90% excited, I guess that's my statement.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Ann Dennis? Oh, Denniston. Sorry. Again, handwriting.
Do I need to, like, touch something here, or yep. You guys take care of that? All right. Thank you. To the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission, I have lived in Vancouver since 1987. I love this place. I love our history. And being a descendant of one of the earliest Washington pioneer settlers has really brought home to me how important a community's history is. I urge the city to reject the proposal for the Historic Providence Academy site. This proposal would irreparably harm the historical character of the site and the academy building and would therefore harm the city and our community. An extremely important part of Mother Joseph's legacy involves her years-long battle with city council to unite the separated parcels of land that she needed to create the historic Providence Academy site. The academy site would not have been able to become a reality without this extremely important victory. To sell off these plots for development would destroy this legacy and render it permanently irrelevant. In addition to the legacy of Mother Joseph's passion and tenacity, the Historic Academy was originally recognized as a bridge between the fort and the civilization and growth of Vancouver. Again, this proposed development undermines and destroys this historic aspect of the site by literally destroying all view sheds from downtown, therefore creating a wall, and cutting the academy off from the community and making this historic aspect of the site irrelevant. The fact that the trust did not know that communities like Our Lady of Lourdes School and St. James Parish were key stakeholders until they were contacted by them at the very end of their process demonstrates a very poor understanding of the legacy of Mother Joseph and the history of Providence Academy. How can they tell Mother Joseph's story if they don't know it? Providence Academy is one of the most important historical sites in the whole region, not just a rundown building and a parking lot waiting for a developer to activate it. Look at the revitalization of Esser Short Park. The shops don't bring people to the park. The park brings people to the shops. It's the same with the Academy site. If the library across the street isn't activating the site, there's no way a couple shops and offices are going to. The Academy itself is the only thing that can activate the site. What is within the Academy matters, and that requires a preservation plan that highlights the history, not a redevelopment plan that chips away at it. Preservation involves protecting our historic Providence Academy site as a whole and protecting, not just talking about, the heritage and history that makes it a historic site in the first place. The site itself is historic and important, not just the Academy building. Rather than highlighting the historic character of the Academy, this proposal diminishes it. If the trust is willing to go so far as to divide the parcels, destroy Mother Joseph's legacy, and permanently make irrelevant the history of the battles fought to make the site a reality, then every other option possible should be exhausted first. The community deserves a better explanation than it's not feasible or the economics don't support it. Where is the feasibility study? If the trust has really exhausted all other options, then it should release the feasibility study that shows why none of the many other options work. The feedback on record so far from actual trained preservationists has been universally negative. The sharp criticisms in the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation's letter align with the code requirements and make it painfully clear that the proposal does not meet the Heritage District Overlay Code. I don't see how city planning can possibly say that this development meets the Heritage District Code. If city planning ignores the expertise of preservationists in favor of politicians and businessmen, then one must wonder why. So I urge the city to enforce its code and reject this proposal. Thank you.
We have two more people that signed up to testify. One of them, again, is very small handwriting, and I can make out Suzanne. Okay. Then I got Suzanne.
I don't look like a Suzanne.
Okay.
So, good evening, Mr. Chair and Commission members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. I've been asked to speak on behalf of Sister Suzanne Hartung from the Sisters of Providence, and I have a letter to read on her behalf, if I can, please.
What was your name again, sir?
Excuse me?
What was your name, sir?
Paul Speer, S-P-E-E-R.
Oh, so you're the next person.
By introduction, Sister Suzanne, if you're not aware, recently celebrated 60 years of religious life, 25 as a teacher, including here in Vancouver, and over 31 with the Sisters of Providence who built the building and whose name is on it today, including time on the board of directors of the Sisters of Providence. Suzanne is charged with maintaining the mission and culture of the Sisters of Providence in her role and works with all the leadership teams to strengthen their commitment to their mission, values, and heritage. She frequently leads cultural and mission tours of the Academy as part of her work. Finally, she has personally been involved at every step on the way for more than a decade with visioning, planning, fundraising, and now execution of this historic project. Sister Suzanne understands and cares deeply about the Academy, Mother Joseph, and what they represent, and provides compelling testimony from a unique vantage point. So I'm going to read her letter if I can right now. The Sisters of Providence built Providence Academy in 1873 to serve as a school and orphanage and as their home and headquarters, moving all their work from the original two-cabin room. It served as a particular need at the time and has changed and grown with the needs of our religious community. This building is filled with stories of the bravery and courage of these women and the sacrifices that they made to provide the hospitals, schools, and orphanages. Mother Joseph had to be the pinnacle of human endeavor. She was the architect and driver who made this building, this place, this opportunity happen. Mother Joseph was a true visionary. As we have studied Providence Academy, it is a tremendously well-built building. I, Suzanne, in this case, have toured thousands of people through the Providence Academy. Providence St. Joseph Health wants all of our executives and directors to understand our origin, and there is nothing that says that more than a visit to Providence Academy, Fort Vancouver, and the cemetery where Mother Joseph is buried. This is all very important to the understanding to understand the sisters' tremendous impact on the area. The historic staff and docents of the trust continue that tradition by providing tours to even thousands more students, senior citizens, and the public week after week, and we thank them for that.
As Monty Hidden said, quote, my father and my two brothers and I bought the academy to save it from being torn down, and I am a fourth-generation brickmaker. The Hidden family is so excited about the historic trust taking over the legacy of the preservation of the academy and makes a wonderful blend for Vancouver and for the next generation to come, end quote. In my view, Suzanne, again, the academy building is the most significant historic building in the entire region, if not the entire state, but this kind of capital improvements necessary will require significant investments. I thank you for the privilege to be part of the campaign with Ed Lynch to raise support for the Academy. There is much hard work ahead to raise the funds necessary for the development of the site, which is critical to that vision. One of the first things said to me by the Historic Trust as we discussed preservation of the Academy was that, quote, just a building unless we can tell the stories that go with it. This building was the epicenter of work that Mother Joseph did, so we owe it to her and owe it to the region to tell the story and to preserve the building forever. It will require business acumen, sensitivity, creativity, and savvy to ensure that the property assets and investments can fund the full restoration of the building and its surrounding campus. Providence Academy has always been a mixed-use site from the earliest beginnings, and it has changed in focus and purpose over time. The amazing additions and forward thinking of the new development continues the interest that Providence Academy remain a highly activated, community-involved, important, and purposeful site for the entire community. New buildings, preserved structures, interpretive programs, and a new face of our contemporary world will guarantee that the hard work of Mother Joseph and the Sisters of Providence and their dedication and tenacity are rewarded by a new generation of committed individuals and organizations who work together for the common good. She concludes with, I wholeheartedly encourage the Historic Trust and Marathon acquisition and development site redevelopment plans, the design concepts, their use, and the value added that Providence Academy provides to our daily lives. It was a challenge to gather together the funding to build this structure and endeavor in 1873, and it will be equally challenging to fulfill its promise and preservation. It will take the support of us all. Sincerely, Sister Suzanne Hartung, Sisters of Providence. So perhaps the most definitive testimony you can have from somebody who represents the organization whose name is on the front of the building.
Thank you, sir.
I think I'm the next step on your line with my for myself.
Yes, you are.
Okay, thank you. With your indulgence, and I appreciate you letting me speak on her behalf, my name is Paul Spear. I've lived in Clark County for 37 years. I'm a retired vice president from Hewlett-Packard Company, board member of the Historic Trust, and my wife and I are actually financial donors to the Providence Academy project, so this is far from academic for us. As a member of the Historic Trust Board, I'd like to thank the commission and members of the community. It's been extremely gratifying to see the level of passion that people bring, whether in support of this project or with concerns. We assume good intentions and share that passion for preservation of the Academy and the stories of Mother Joseph. My hope is that that passion can be joined with an equally strong shared understanding of what is required to actually do this preservation. A project of this magnitude best succeeds by a community working together. Frankly, a lot has been said in the public square about this project, so in closing, I'd like to just make 5 points. I think that's important to understand. First, were it not for the dedication and long-term vision of Historic Trust founder Ed Lynch, we would not have the opportunity to even be sitting here tonight. The Historic Trust board and staff are, in the majority of cases, long-term local residents of our community who all have shared his commitment to the preservation of the Academy. And you'll find, frankly, no other organization in this community with the depth of commitment, resources, and networks more willing to take this on. Second point, as passionate as we are about preserving the Academy, we're equally clear-headed about what is required to do this. Preservation of this magnitude is an enormous undertaking. Investment to date already places this project in the top dozen or so Southwest Washington nonprofit organization capital efforts ever. At completion, this will be in the top 3 or 4 nonprofit capital investments, and I'm aware of only one other since 2012 that will be of this magnitude in our community. Funding needs are well beyond what can be achieved with parking lots, conversion of the entire property to green spaces, TDRs, and other ideas that we and others have explored. We are grateful for the broad-based support of donors, including our own board. We've received donations from $10 to $2 million plus. There's a broad-based group of people in this community that support this, in addition to the grants we received from like-minded organizations and public sources to support the purchase and early renovation. The Academy does enjoy operational income from 60 small businesses. You've heard about that earlier today. Parking tenants to cover the costs and maintenance is required. That said, the hard fact is that without financial resources made possible through this development you're hearing tonight, the remainder of this project simply will not happen. The Historic Trust is in the business of education, preservation, and celebration. We're not property developers. Development is simply a means to achieve the preservation goals that we have set for the Academy. By agreeing to purchase the west and north sections of this property that we're talking about tonight, it has provided us the opportunity to thoroughly evaluate options over multiple years, work with the historic building experts, add additional development requirements above those of the heritage overlay, and locate a developer that truly understands the unique story of this site, willing to work with us to ensure both financial viability and the necessary adaptation. Finally, again, the Academy is simply an old building absent stories of Mother Joseph and the work that took place. The Historic Trust is committed to this. Nearly 7,500 people have toured the facility since we acquired the property in 2015. We expect this to grow as the site improves. In addition, an average over an event a week takes place in the Academy ballroom, the chapel, or on the grounds, including meetings, receptions, and weddings. And as the property becomes more inviting, we look forward to this growing as well. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you this evening. You've got a lot to think about, I know. We would welcome the continued participation of members of the community as we enter this next phase. We welcome the public to come take a tour and see what has already been done and to learn more about what is planned in the immediate future, including renovations of the chapel and ballroom. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, that concludes our public testimony for this evening. Public comments. So at this time, I'll open it up to deliberation on the part of the commissioners. We've got a lot of information to digest. We've got some very impassioned viewpoints here. I'd like to make sure that, you know, everybody at least puts in their 2 cents worth, so to speak, and let's try to be respectful of each other's comments and time. And just one question, Jackie. I noticed in the memorandum that it refers to Nick Van from the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation, his email, but I don't see it as an attachment. It's referenced as an attachment 7 and 8. Did you get it?
It's part of this one right here.
It is in there. Okay, sorry. All right, so... thank you, Jack. With that said, I'll open it up to deliberation on the part of the commissioners.
Do we want to address each of the 3 elements separately and discuss them separately? Because they seem like there's one that sort of sticks out that might take more time than the others. I'm thinking maybe we can address the other 2. First?
1 and 3 first.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Sure.
Maybe start with El Presidente.
Okay, El Presidente. Hope we don't have to spend too much time on that one.
Was I understanding from staff that we actually don't have to consider that one at all?
I think if you just get confirmation that the National Historic Register talks about the entire site. Mm-hmm. It, to me, in reading it, it didn't necessarily state what buildings are historic, but the heritage overlay, you know, says anything that is historic or could be historic needs your approval. I just want confirmation that this building does not need your approval, and then we can move on to the other items, I think, would be.
The National Register nomination specifically excludes that building, so
okay.
I think that's...
All right. that's what I need, so okay.
Do we need to make a formal...
Yeah, just maybe we just go on the record and saying you agree. Maybe just...
Let's make a motion.
Take a motion and say you agree with
it. What do you think, Jackie? Do we need to make a motion on this?
It doesn't hurt.
Probably just adds to the record, yeah. Okay. Anybody want to make a motion on...
I move that the HPC state their agreement with the demolition proposed.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. The fate of the El Presidente Mexican restaurant is sealed. Moving on to item number two, the new mixed-use project. Wait, that's probably one of the more difficult, challenging ones. Let's jump to number three and come back to number two. So renovation of the west porch of the Academy building. Comments on that?
Just reiterate what I said earlier. I think recognizing that there was a stair there somewhere in the design would be a good thing. So just to ensure that it doesn't create a false sense that that is original. I don't think it's a big deal, and I think it could be handled pretty simply, but I do think it's important.
Mm-hmm. I think the renovation that they're proposing definitely will make that entrance look more inviting to use, for the future, for the tenants now and for future visitors to the building. I also appreciated Holly's suggestion on adding some sort of a plaque that would show what it actually originally looked like. I think that would be a good mitigation measure.
Hey, the one thing that sort of stood out to me is losing the stairs in the central portion of that facade, because it's an entrance, and those stairs would have guided you into that entrance, and it just sort of seems to remove that visual invitation to the entrance. But, obviously there were logistical reasons for moving it to the north end. Did I hear correctly that there was a staircase in the north end originally? Okay, I was trying to look in that photo and couldn't see it. So.
Well, it seems as if the stairs would be located closer to the parking. More of the logistical reasons, correct? Okay.
And I think it would break up the pedestrian walkway that's planned for right there. Mm-hmm.
So. Any final comments on the renovation of the west porch? Not. I'd love to hear a motion.
I make a motion to approve the renovations of the west porch with some of the additional design elements that we've discussed.
Anything in specific?
The historical rendering plaque.
The mitigation measure.
Yes.
Yeah. So we have a motion to approve the renovation of the west porch as it's been presented with the mitigation of a plaque identifying the original look and feel.
I'd like to offer a friendly amendment and differentiation of that baluster where the stairs used to be.
I'll accept your amendment.
Okay.
In that case, I second. I'll be back. Can I both amend and second?
The motion has been amended for the mitigation measure for the original appearance, and then also could you rephrase that, Sean?
The differentiation of the portion of the balustrade where the stairs originally were.
Right, and you're thinking materials or design?
Either. I think there are several effective solutions that they can do.
Okay. Effective differentiation of the design. The motion has been put forth. Did I get a second? I do have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion is carried. And now we will move on to item number two, the new mixed-use project. So we've got four bullet points here. We could take them one at a time, but I think we just tackle this item all together. Comments, deliberations on the new mixed-use project?
Should we start at one end? Or?
Sure, let's try that. Let's just work our way down and maybe start on my far right. Michelle, you have any comments, thoughts on this before we proceed?
I guess I would say that I understand it's an economic decision to sell the property. And I'm glad to see that some funding will be going into renovating the academy. I think that that's great. I do have some concerns about the design of the proposed development. I've read the materials. I know that there's been a significant effort to try to take some of the design elements from the academy and incorporate them into the two proposed buildings. But I don't really see the two buildings complementing each other as much as I would like. They seem very distinct from each other. And indeed, I see two of the buildings having a very modern take on them. And I have some real concerns about that. I just wonder if there is some way to try to bring more of a historic design element into the two buildings. And so that's my two cents at this point.
There, I heard a couple of things that resonated with me. One was the 90% excited. I like that. That description, and that's kind of where I sit. Much as Michelle just said, I think that we're all understanding the financial realities, and we're all wanting to preserve the existing provenance structure, the academy. The main issues that I would want to see addressed by the city's review, one of them, again, came up in the discussion with Rob Freed, former Historic Preservation Commission member's comment about that, paragraph E and the question of the views from C Street. From the C Street area of Evergreen. We just took a little vote on the demolition of the restaurant building, and I might point out that if we were sitting here talking about the restaurant building instead of the mixed-use building, the restaurant building could be constructed to a height of 200 feet in that location, and it would be in total compliance with the Vancouver Municipal Code, as far as I can tell from what I've heard tonight, what I see in the code. So I think there's something to consider as far as that question of the view from the corner of C Street and Evergreen. Other comment I had, I really like the plaza idea. I think that offers up a view corridor of sorts. I appreciate that the developer gave up another 16 feet to the plaza. I did do some quick math that I can't necessarily stand behind because math isn't my strong suit. But for building A, it looks like we gave up 6,240 square feet. Then we added a floor on building B, so we added 16,458 square feet. And I'm wondering if the math could possibly work out where we put some of that back in that plaza and improve that view corridor. As far as the design of the building, I think they're attractive structures. I think they could be attractive structures on Division Street in Portland or Uptown Village in Vancouver or any one of a variety of places. Although I think if the designer was to try to start applying historic elements to those buildings, they would run the risk of creating some kind of false historicism, and I don't know that that's an easy challenge to meet as far as creating a design for that building that's sympathetic to the academy design the original building and attractive as a new development in downtown. That is what I've got.
So I'm definitely not the architect on our commission, and I do look at everything more through a planner's version of these applications. And I had already expressed, a few questions on the criteria E, where the criteria says 15 feet for open space and substantial planting. It also has the word not less than. I mean, there's many words that also direct you more than. I don't think they're as discretionary as we think. I think they're pretty clear. In the planner's world, we have a lot of minimums. We have a lot of words that say not less than. I do appreciate the building being pushed back further to make a more of a plaza and to open up that view corridor more from the version that we saw a few months back. But I think that that 15 feet means that they want substantial planting. And substantial planting means that in 20 years, will those planters feel substantial? Will you feel like you have a tree canopy when you're walking along that street frontage? I've been doing a lot of work in my jurisdiction in Camas on a tree code, and I've learned a lot about trees in the last 2 years, probably more than I ever needed to learn. But I have learned that the size of that planter is actually one of the biggest parts that you can get right or you can get really wrong. So a 4-foot by 4-foot minimum planter size is going to get you a little tiny tree, and that little tiny tree is going to die in 20 years, and they're going to replace it. So I would push for the city to hold to that 15 feet of planter area. Maybe it is a 15 by 15 foot planter area for a large tree to be able to grow there. The species of the tree, there's a whole list of species of trees that grow better in larger planter areas, and that means that in 20 years you'll still have a tree there. So I think that's one of the items that I wanted to bring forward. I also am not a fan of the design of the buildings. I would have liked to have seen some of those rounded windows just for us to confirm maybe what your team had confirmed, that it might have looked contrived. But like I said, I'm not an architect, so I'm not sure if I would agree if it looks contrived or not. And the others on this commission might say, you guys are right. Don't waste your time on that design element anymore. I also note that this project has met the zoning requirements of the City of Vancouver. And with that said, the demolition of this building has me concerned in the fact that now there is a hole in this overlay where, as Rock stated, some building could go up in the next, that is 200 feet high or whatnot. So following on the heels of this project, I do think it should be on the list of items that the City of Vancouver should review is this historic overlay, because we should have had a public hearing. The process for review of projects within a historic overlay should have more weight in front of this commission than just advisory.
So my thoughts, first of all, going back to my comments before we took public comment, in terms of this being a cultural landscape, and so what defines that? And the Secretary of the Interior lists a number of things, one of which is really the relative significance in history. And
The interesting aspect of a cultural landscape is its combination of different elements of historic preservation. And in this case, we have the academy building itself, which is really an exercise in preservation and bringing that back. And then in terms of the site and the left half of the property, or the west part of the property, it's really a case of rehabilitation, right, and repurposing it and bringing new vitality to the project and the site. And, you know, I understand the purist argument that's been put forth this evening, but I also think in terms of exhausting the opportunities or, you know, the different possible uses, just the amount of time that has passed before we got an investor and we got a project with legs under it to come forward and really carry this thing forward says a lot about just what a challenging property this is to rehabilitate and give new life to. So with that being said, you know, we've seen a number of presentations in terms of the public process. I think the Historic Trust has been very proactive in coming to the HPC. We've provided a great deal of feedback and during the course of those meetings over the last couple of years. And, I'm encouraged that so much of that feedback is being reflected in the current renderings. I do agree that there's a certain amount of ambiguity in the heritage overlay, and I understand some of the questions around the sight lines, and certainly, you know, whatever challenge the HPC may have had in the past when it was advising and developing these heritage overlay districts. However, I think the heritage overlay has served its purpose because it's really brought some protection to this site and given us an opportunity to weigh in on its future and given the public an opportunity to weigh in a meaningful way. I am a little bit disappointed that we haven't got a little more encouraging feedback on the future of the smokestack, the boiler room tower, because that is such a defining characteristic of the site. And I understand it's expensive. I understand the need for seismic retrofitting. But even at $700,000, I think is the projected cost that you mentioned, that still seems fairly small in terms of the overall project and the importance of that particular characteristic and feature of the site. And then I'm also encouraged by the applicant's comments about, you know, interpretation of substantial planting. It sounds like they're very willing and open to any feedback that we have for that. In terms of my own opinion, and I agree with Sarah, I think you can either get plantings right or wrong and screw them up bad. We want to get this right. In terms of what is substantial, I would say probably 50%. And in terms of my feedback of what that could look like, I would look, you know, maybe at historic photographs and you know, maybe native plantings and something that might bring back the original character to the site as well. But overall, I think this is a very positive project. I appreciate all of the strong emotions that are behind it. And at this point, I personally feel that the project should go forward. And I appreciate all the mitigation and design changes that have gone into it.
So in looking at this, you know, one of the things that I think we've really focused on is the preservation of the building itself. And, you know, looking at the Heritage Overlay District language, it definitely plays up the grounds in addition to the building itself. And
The National Register nomination is for the whole site, including the grounds, and they're very much linked to each other, you know, and I think Robert kind of highlighted that by reading the cultural landscape portion of those from the National Park Service. Going over the language and not so much in the criteria portion, but in the policy and intent portions of the heritage overlay, you know, there were some things that really stuck out that, you know, recognition of the Academy as the dominant landmark in downtown. My concern, and I expressed this when you guys came before us earlier in the spring, was that I felt like the massing of these buildings and their position diminishes that dominance that the Academy has there. It says in the code that it's the policy of the city to preserve critical open spaces integral to the site. I think the El Presidente building was a good example of how not to preserve that open space. And I'm sure when it was built, it was sold as a means to activate the site. And 20 years later, we're all sitting there going, let's get rid of it. And I don't want that to happen with this development. Then also the language of preserve views of the Academy from East Evergreen entrance to the downtown area. So I read that to mean from the main entrance of the Academy to the downtown area, and I think that view would be totally disrupted. So in that sense, it doesn't meet that. So, and I mentioned this earlier, I'm concerned about not only this development, but then the future development, and I'm just concerned that this would begin a chipping away, and that we'd end up with this building as an island. I mean, already we have I-5 that cut off the east side and its connection to Fort Vancouver. Now the west side is getting cut off, and then we don't know what's happening in the north, and so what I'm concerned is that we're going to have this isolated, almost an island of a building left, and it would lose that connection to the landscape, to the campus. So those are my concerns. I think having a management plan that sort of took in the whole, 5-year plan, 20-year plan, and you guys probably have that, I think maybe it's more theoretical or something. But that's it. I mean, I think that maybe the question of the feasibility studies, by the time it came to us, it was very much a well envisioned project with legs and everything. So I guess echoing Sarah's comments about bringing it before us earlier in the process might be something to consider. That's it.
Thanks. So in my day job, I actually write codes and train code officials. So I actually don't find this language very ambiguous at all. I think it's very clear and pretty prescriptive in some places. It gets, it gets more into the principles and the purposes, but I think it's pretty clear. And for me, the biggest one is that the views from Evergreen. And, we don't have in any of these packets a site plan that shows all the roads, and the renderings all show Evergreen with 4 lanes and then 2 lanes of parking, which is a much wider street than is actually there. So I went out to the site and I measured it out based on the plans that we had, and the perspective to the western facade, and this is why I was concerned, is blocked from everywhere on Evergreen under this plan. It was worse before, but it is still blocked. And so you lose, I think, what is one of the most critical views of the Academy, which is this perspective view that brings in the western facade that allows you to actually envision the whole thing and not just see a building as a front facade. And I think that's a pretty big loss. And E is pretty clear that preserving views. Now, that 75-foot limit, now that's a zoning limit. That's not a preservation limit. So yeah, you can build up to 75 or even up to 200 on this site, but that doesn't change the fact that these preservation requirements exist. So maybe you can get a one-story or two-story building in there and still consider that view preserved, but a building that's actually taller than the academy's ridgeline, it blocks it entirely. I really don't see how it complies with that requirement. And I echo the concern, if we're going to focus on the 0-foot height, if we're going to have this interpretation of the requirement that is so lax, then that means anywhere where there's not a 0-foot height, a future project can come through and say, well, we've already interpreted the code to mean that we don't have to protect all the views, so we're going to go ahead and build a building here. And so I'm really concerned about that bad precedent that we see. I'm also on C Street. There's the view corridor that's required from 11th to the main building of the academy. And, I asked Keith that question about the purposes and the intents, because, I think the purposes and the intents say why that requirement exists. And so if you look at A.1, it says that it exists because the grounds are important, because of the relationship to the academy building, and because of their influence on views of the academy. So if you look at this view corridor that's in this project, you have a view to the back of the academy, which is, you can't understand what you're seeing, and it's not a meaningful view, and it doesn't show you anything. And so if we interpret that requirement that this meets that requirement, but it doesn't meet any of the intents of the code or the purposes of the code, so it's kind of meaningless to just say, just has to be 50 feet wide. And the code makes it pretty clear that we need to meet the intents and the purposes. And, I think that notion of losing that western facade, that was one of the main connections to the site. When you look at historic photos, you see most of the historic photos we actually have of students on the site show students going in and out of that entrance. And I think that the purposes really get into the broader preservation issues, and I think that they're really important. So, C on the purposes requires retention of unique architectural and historical features. And I think that that's one of the really big things here. If you read the history of the site, one of the big things is this idea that, we have a woman having to battle a male power structure to be able to for them to vacate the streets so that she could build this project. And they kept telling her, it's not feasible. Don't be so ambitious. She did it anyway, and then she needed to build something bigger because it was, in fact, a reason to be even more ambitious. And so I think it's really problematic to divide the site, but to even put in roads when the elimination of roads is one of the historically defining characteristics of the site. And, it doesn't mean that there can't be development on the site or maybe even selling off parts of it, but if you look historically at the site plans, development was always on the north. It was always behind the academy. It wasn't in front of the academy. The sisters made wide use of the land behind the academy. And since we heard that they're thinking about developing that north side anyway, it seems to make sense to develop the least precious part of the site first rather than second. I think another element is actually thinking about the academy itself. If you look at the architectural style and the architectural character of the academy, it's this formal architecture. It's this object in a landscape, and Mother Joseph designed it that way on purpose. If you read the history that the Provident Sisters have put together, it's for the poor, but it's this big thing. And I think it's really problematic. And even the Heritage Code calls it the principal building on the site. But if these buildings are approved, they become the principal building on the site. They're bigger, they're more massive, they're taller to a certain extent. They'll spatially dominate the site. They block a whole bunch of views to the academy, so they're the first building that you see walking down Evergreen, and that's actually one of my big concerns, is that pedestrian access down Evergreen. Evergreen's kind of weak between B and C, and so if all you see are some apartment buildings, there's nothing to draw you down. If you see a historic building, you might walk down that street. If you see a coffee shop and an apartment building, you're not likely to. And that prominence on the site is really a key architectural characteristic. It's just as integral as, you know, the Georgian stylings and the brick, and that's something that would be completely lost, no longer be the dominant building on the site. You know, I think that it really doesn't meet the code requirements as they're laid out. I'm really worried about a precedent where the code requirements would be enforced so loosely, because that would really have a detrimental impact, because our downtown is under a lot of development pressure right now. And our downtown probably needs development, and it needs good development, but that could put a lot of our other historic resources, because we have a whole other heritage overlay district, at risk. You know, I don't see how this can be moved forward. You know, I actually have a whole lot of preservation concerns with this outside of just the code requirements. And I think you saw, you know, Dr. Orthel, who actually wrote the profile on this project, gave a public comment that was pretty critical. You know, the comments that we have from preservationists have been very critical. And I think that we really should pay attention to that. I don't think that that's kind of the approach that a city that has some of the most, you know, notable historic resources in the region, and one of the things that really sets us apart, to not really diligently enforce our code and protect those resources. So I really don't see how this can be approved. If it's a matter of economics, that this really is the only economic path, then I think we enforce the code and they can apply for a variance. I mean, the code's got structures built in for when code requirements are impossible. So let them do that if they can't comply with the code. And they can bring in, you know, the studies and all their numbers, and they can show how this is the only option. But I think that the city really does need to enforce the code.
My perspective tonight comes as one who is a Vancouver native and lifelong resident. In the letter Mr. Spear read on behalf of Sister Susanna Hartung, he quoted Monty Hidden, who reminded the community that following the Academy's decommissioning as an educational institution, the building sat derelict for 6 years until his family, the Hidden family, bought the property in 1972 to redevelop the former parochial school to a mixed-use retail and services venue. Providence Academy has, therefore, been living on borrowed time for more than 40 years. The building has never been maintained to more than a minimal degree. So here's the conundrum. Providence Academy struggles for survival. Now, this may not be the last best chance for Providence Academy to remain a viable vestige in Vancouver, but it also might be. Almost every repurposing project requires significant instances of compromise. There were objections when the Clark County Courthouse underwent ADA compliance alterations. There were vocal concerns when a legislative act had to be passed to allow the Kiggins Theater to sell alcoholic beverages. And we are still debating changes to the Heritage Farm. The Historic Trust has been reviewing proposals for 5 years now, and Marathon's is the first one it has suggested be accepted. The longer we debate, mitigate, equivocate, deliberate, the less likely that the object of our discussion will even endure.
Thank you, Andy. All right, so we have it. The Historic Preservation Commission's thoughts, feelings is kind of a microcosm of what we're hearing in the community, which just reinforces what an important property and historic asset this is for Clark County and the city of Vancouver. Not exactly sure where to go from here. We need to provide, I guess we don't need to provide, we can provide directions. We certainly don't need to endorse, and I don't think we need to vocally not endorse this. We have no such requirements, do we?
Keith wants it, but no. Well, not required.
I mean, technically, no. I mean, I did talk to the city attorney, and in typical roles of advisory groups that we have, they usually do provide some sort of recommendation or discussion. Now, this is an advisory role, so I think, you know, it depends on where the commission wants to land on that.
So yeah, so
preferably, I mean, it would make sense to have something in the record that said this is
a little more direction other than
Mr. Chairman,
the deliberation.
May I make a suggestion?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I think everyone made their position manifestly clear. And in as much as we are an advisory group, wouldn't the content of our comments carry more weight than an up or down vote? And so I would think that it would be divisive for the commission, especially since we have two new members, to have a 4-3, a 5-2, 6-1 unanimous decision and allow the city and also the applicants to weigh our comments and let the content of those comments stand as our recommendations.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's problematic here, Andy, is that there's so many mitigating factors and, you know, additional criteria that could be put on any kind of a motion, right? So it's still an open question of what do we do with the boiler room tower, for example, in terms of the plantings, the specific guidelines that we want to provide. I mean, we could debate that, we could hash that out, but I think it would be very hard to really summarize that in any kind of concise, actionable motion.
And I'd like to also say that if we let the content of our comments stand, then the door remains open for further review and further discussion. Whereas if we come up with a recommendation one way or the other, we'll leave an impression that our mind is made up and that we really aren't interested in further deliberation.
Just curious if anybody else has any thoughts on this course of action. Sarah, I always look to your sage advice on such matters.
Justly so.
Well, I think what we need to remind ourselves is the very first part of the staff report. You know, we are an advisory body. We have given very clear motions for items 1 and 3. Number 2, I'd just say that it seems like our commission is a bit split, and we could, as a suggestion, we could look at each bullet point separately and have some kind of a straw poll on our thoughts of support or non-support, because our comments as to why we support or don't support have been well documented tonight. So we could provide a little bit more feedback, maybe based on each element of the proposal under number 2. If that would help.
That's possible. I think that's a good idea, because it sounds like most of the resistance here is really around the questions of the sight line and the impact of Building A. The other 3 bullet points, Building B, surface parking and plaza, seem to be less contentious.
I'll start then. I'll make a motion that, in general, we approve the design of the plaza, with the exception of increasing the planter width to at least a minimum of 15 feet wide to allow for room for large species trees.
Second.
All in favor of motion to on the plaza?
I have a quick question. Does that imply that we then also approve of the building that defines the edge of that plaza?
No, we're going to go on each bullet point. Okay.
Just want to be clear.
One bullet point at a time.
So we have a motion on the plaza. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, surface parking.
Surface parking to me seems to be somewhat contingent on the fate of Building A, because if that space was going to be relocated to the north side of the site, which I think is one of the possibilities that Nick Van wanted to explore in the letter from DAP, then that would kind of preclude approval on the surface parking.
I guess I'd say that I don't think we had too many concerns about the location of their surface parking, but did we have concerns about it? Just you're saying because if we're suggesting moving a building.
Yes, if relocation of the building seems to be one of the things that a lot of the concern here is about, then that space would need to be moved to another part of the lot that could accommodate it.
No, I think my one concern about the surface parking is that it is dependent on introducing a road back into this site, which is, I think, directly contradicts the historical character of the site.
I liked the new revision to their surface parking, which has the initial, 50 feet or so level with the plaza, so that it doesn't look so much like a road entering the site.
It helps.
Right. So I think that was actually a really big improvement to the design of that. Otherwise, it did look very much separating the uses. So I'd support their plan as they've posed it for that. What is a great description for that? It's just lovely.
There's also still, though, that road that goes between the two buildings, which reads road. And mm-hmm. So I think making the other one read less road helps, but I really don't think it solves it. I think there is just kind of a fundamental problem with reintroducing roads to a site when removing the roads is a historically defining feature of the site.
Yeah, I do think it helps also for the surface of those roads. So using brick was also a big improvement as well from the pedestrian standpoint. It softens it. It does feel less like a road. I wouldn't suggest that you would overuse it. So maybe we don't have any consensus on the parking.
On the path we're going down with the bullet points, they are all interdependent. So mm-hmm. Any comments that we have on any one of those bullet points is likely to change how we would interpret one of the others. And I think I remember hearing at the outset with your, Keith, your explanation of what your department would like to have from us is a letter stating our position. And I'm thinking about what Andy said and thinking that we have some very skilled staff here who could potentially take Andy's suggestion and turn it into a compilation letter that we could each look at and move forward and then recommend by some other email consensus or what have you, that it be presented as the opinion of the HPC. Does that make any sense?
It makes sense, Rob, but I'm not sure you're going to get much consensus on the content or the advice in that contained in that letter.
A list of
it might be valuable.
I mean, isn't our main point to
determine whether the proposed development is consistent with the language in the heritage overlay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as placed on the agenda, yes, that's the main idea.
And then that question of, is it just restricted to the criteria, or is it more broad-based purpose and intent and spirit of the code?
I think it has to be broad-based. The code is written with purpose sections, but this is the only time I have seen in any code where they actually say the compliance is specifically dependent on being in line with the purpose section, where the purpose section has been kind of drafted into being more than just a, hey, this is what this chapter of the code is about.
So this is where I would disagree. I think that there's a lot that we would want to interpret into this code, but what I come away with is that a sense that what we really would like to do is direct the city to amend this code. And it isn't something that would affect this current proposal. This current proposal came in under the codes in place now.
Right.
And I think there is a whole rest of the site that could soon be developed, could or it might wait another 40 years, 50 years. But I think that as a commission, we might want to add this onto our list of things to do and to push forward on is a revision to this overlay, because we're seeing tonight that there are a lot of things lacking. I guess one of our roles isn't to decide if the proposal is economically feasible, which we've heard a lot about tonight, and there is a lot of support for it as an economic, I guess it'll save the site is basically what we're hearing. But I also don't think we need to penalize the current development based on something that we hope and wish would happen on the site. They've jumped through a lot of hurdles and done a lot more than this code requires them to do. But they're still made a lot of revisions, again, even though it wasn't required to do it. So I guess my proposal would be to support the proposal with a few of these conditions that we have discussed tonight. But then, like I said, put on our list for future commission action to move forward with supporting changes to the Vancouver's historic preservation overlays.
No, I think several of the comments that have been given here do pertain, directly to the code requirements, and I would flip that a little bit. I would flip it to say that, quite frankly, I don't think that we can support this without key changes to the design, because reading the code language, with the purposes aside, just reading the specific requirements, it really doesn't meet all of them. And so I don't see how we can generally support a project that doesn't meet all the requirements. The substantial plantings part, the view part. Maybe that view from C is a little bit squishier, but I don't think it complies with that either. Actually, if you take a literal reading of the brick color, it says a brick color similar to the academy, and the brick color is really, maybe that is squishy, but it's not the same colors. So, I think we've, as a group, have identified some kind of key issues where this proposal doesn't align with the code requirements. I don't see how we as a commission can generally support this proposal. Maybe we just let our feedback be our feedback, but I don't see how we can generally support it. I do see how we could generally say it needs these key changes to be in line with the code. And although we might argue what those key changes have to be, but I definitely don't see how we as a commission can generally support this proposal.
I mean, the one that sticks out to me is the one I read before, which is under the standards and requirements. The regulations are necessary to preserve the unique open space, which provides a setting for and which is an integral part of the Providence Academy site, and to preserve views of the Academy from the East Evergreen Boulevard entrance to the downtown area. That's a hurdle I just can't, I mean, I keep getting stuck on that. If that building A is there, then that view shed to the downtown is completely blocked.
But isn't that view shed already blocked by the library? A view to the downtown, that view to the...
Well, I take that to mean to the west.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Just brought up the fact that maybe downtown we have different definitions of downtown. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that
I would
it's
have thought
telling
that the
when they built
blocks the view. Yeah.
I think that it's telling when they built the library, they changed the Heritage District to pull that property out of the Heritage District. So to build a big bulky project like that before, the city felt it necessary to exclude that land from the Heritage District to move forward with it. And it's because it does block views. I think that what we're seeing is, you know, different views that get blocked. And I think that view from downtown is critical, especially with the things that the city has said about the importance of the heritage loop that goes down Evergreen. You know, to have that interrupted by, oh, look, here's some, you know, here's a new wall of apartments. I think that that's going to have a pretty big detrimental impact on that heritage loop. You know, and it's because of the impact on the views.
So maybe one proposal here is we just vote straight up or down on a motion to endorse the plan with the condition that the applicant, you know, continue to seek advice from the HPC as the project moves forward. We can all vote our minds, you know, up or down how we see this at this point in time, whether we feel that the balance of considerations at play warrants, you know, moving forward, and the economic trade-offs and such at play have been addressed in the context of the broader purpose of Heritage Overlay Number 1. We speak our minds and we move forward on it, because I don't think we're going to reach a resolution this evening if we continue to debate all of the fine details of this, you know, very complex project. I mean, Aaron said it earlier, this is a very challenging project. It's multidimensional in many aspects. I don't think we're going to come up with any kind of panacea from the HPC that's going to address all of the community's concerns. So that's one possible way of moving forward here. The other is going back to Andy's recommendation, which is that we let our comments be the record. I mean, the staff came to us this evening asking for our opinions and our input, and we have certainly provided it. It is part of the public record. I know that the Historic Trust has been, you know, very open and very receptive to our input so far in this long process. I don't have any reason to believe that they would not, you know, take the variety of feedback that they have received here tonight to heart and try to mitigate some of those concerns if they are possible. We also have the letter from the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation listing some of their concerns. So they are involved in trying to mitigate some of the impacts and the concerns that you're raising, Andy, and you're raising, Alex. So I think, you know, there's still a great deal of friction in the system here, which can be used to help, you know, iron out and kind of an optimal solution as the project, you know, fully comes to fruition in the months ahead. So that's two possible courses of action. I'm interested in any feedback. We can pursue either one. but I, for one, am not interested in being here all night long either. No, I don't think the public is.
I'm ready to make a motion that we, on item number two, we let our comments that we have individually made stand as our stand for the record. Does that make any sense? Did that come out? Okay.
Yes. Second.
So we have a motion that the deliberation and the comments coming from the HPC members this evening stand as our record, and our feedback on item number two, the new mixed-use project, and we proceed accordingly. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion is carried. Thank you. All right. I thank the public for their patience this evening.
Robert, do we want to make something formal about revising the code or whether or not this property...
I say we table that one to another meeting.
All right.
We could...
Put it on the agenda to discuss next meeting.
That's my opinion. Sure. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
So we'll move on to new business and announcements.
And we're just going to run through this, and we'll some of it's just to prep for September 5th, so because that's coming up soon. Just want to let you all know we did apply. Remember, we applied for the CLG grant for Parkersville. We did not receive that grant, so we have encouraged them to apply for the historical promotion grant as another opportunity, as we had presented to them originally. So we'll see if that comes in or not. But it seems like they're still interested in doing something. So that's kind of the update there. For the September meeting, I will be discussing with you the county's proposal to change the open space current use designation program to what we call public benefit rating system. And a couple of those categories have to do with historic sites. So I'm going to need you all to weigh in on some of that and get some feedback from you. So we'll be having that on the agenda for September 5th. So I'll be sending you some information about that. Let's see what else. So old business. Tomorrow, for those that can attend, it's not required, but if you can make it, we've got the preservation plan presentation in front of the Heritage Farm team over at the Public Works Operations Center on 78th Street at 4. We've got chair, vice chair elections on September 5th, so just get ready for that as we had been prepared for the July meeting, right? Yes, July.
Jackie, have you forwarded the letters of interest to the new members as well? Okay, great.
Yeah. Lastly, CLG training, Tacoma. Do we need anything more from them?
We've gotten everybody to confirm that you're attending, except for Michelle. Is that correct?
Yes, she won't be able to attend.
But
so,
anybody else is positive?
Okay, so put that on your calendar, and we'll be heading up there. That's all from me.
All right.
So I did go to the National Association of Preservation Commissions, and I'd love to tell you about that another time.
Yeah, we're putting on the September agenda.
How was it, by the way?
It was very good, and our work on the Confederate monument really got us a lot of kudos. I can tell you more about it another time.
Great. So we'll put that on the agenda for the next meeting also.
Public comment?
Do we have?
That is the one. Yeah, are you, you're going to be able to make that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we're ready for another round of public comment. Anybody Rob? Okay. If there's no other public comment this evening, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
I second.
The August meeting of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission is adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
It was unmuted.